did. It's time for Jim Cates at CJ Online. News, opinion, interviews, and community conversation. Live and online. Join Jim and his guests by calling 295-1150 or emailing jim.cates@cjonline.com. And now, from the Topeka Capital Journal and cjonline.com, here's the Dean of Talk Radio in Topeka, Jim Cates.
Hey, and good morning, Topeka. This hour is brought to you in part by the Golden Corral, the best buffet to be found anywhere in Northeast Kansas. 16th and Wanamaker, open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner, and Saturdays and Sundays, breakfast as well. And again, we're talking about the Golden Corral. A couple of other sponsors, a past sponsor, possibly a future sponsor as well. My good friend, Madon Raton. Many of you remember Madon, I'm sure, from the days of the Coffee Break Cafe, when Madon was a long-time sponsor of the Jim Cates Show and has since become a good friend. He now has a motel in Solana, the Sleep Inn. And, folks, if you're headed to Solana, would highly recommend the Sleep Inn. We spent a night there last Saturday night. It's brand new, clean as a whistle. Just a wonderful place to stay, but Madon also is getting ready to open the Holiday Inn Express on North 24 Highway. And, folks, that's right around the corner as far as the opening date for a new quality motel north of the river in North Topeka. So you want to check it out. And Dickie's Restaurant Barbecue, a new barbecue restaurant's coming to Topeka, and they're going to have their soft opening May the 25th. So if you like good barbecue, if you live north of the river, or for that matter live anywhere, and or around Topeka, check out Dave Weinrich's Dickie's Barbecue, May the 25th, the date. Quite a lineup today. We have Jim Ogle, TV 13. He's coming in at 9 o'clock along with John Arnold. We're going to be taking a look at the top stories of the week. At 10 o'clock, of course, Dave Jackson's coming in for his weekly appearance. Next Monday, I have two guests coming in. We're going to be talking about the 2010 legislative session, and folks, I served for 4 years in the legislature, nothing to write home about. We certainly had a miserable 4 years in terms of holding the line on spending. But this group of people, this 2010 bunch, they might have set the record for being the all-time worst legislators the state has ever had. We're going to be talking about that a little later when it comes to responsible spending, fiscal responsibility. This group might be the all-time worst. What a god-awful mess. Hey, we've got a great guest joining us by phone. In fact, he is on his way to Manhattan as we speak. He's in his car and a candidate for Secretary of State. We're going to talk about his Secretary of State race in a few minutes. But first, we're going to spend some time talking about the great state of Arizona. Good morning, Chris Gobach.
Good morning, Jim.
Good to have you with us again, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
You are headed to Manhattan. This has got to be a Secretary of State campaign appearance, I would assume. You're not dealing with an illegal immigration issue in Manhattan, are you?
Actually, we're heading to McPherson, but no illegal immigration issue.
All right. You're headed to McPherson.
Yeah, a little campaign stop, but the illegal immigration issue is red hot, as you know.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, you've been all over the national news, and you're going to be on Greta tonight. I doubt if I'll be watching it. I've about had it with Fox. I can't watch Fox News anymore. You know, it seems
really?
Like, yeah, it seems like every time I tune in, Karl Rove is on there. I think I would rather watch Rachel Maddow than Karl Rove.
That's quite a statement. I can't believe that. Rachel Maddow? Watching Rachel Maddow is like sticking pins and needles into yourself.
To me, Karl Rove's the same. You know, for 8 years, Karl Rove was the orchestrator of the Bush presidency. I didn't think it could get any worse than George W. Bush until we elected Obama, so obviously I was wrong there. But why are we putting Karl Rove on this Fox News pedestal? I don't get it.
He must have a nice contract with Fox.
Oh, I just don't understand it. But at any rate, you're going to be on Greta tonight. I'm sure you're going to be talking about the Arizona law because you've been given a lot of credit nationally for being the co-author of the Arizona bill.
Yeah, I worked with Russell Pierce, the senator who introduced it, to draft that law. And as you know, I'm involved defending cities and states around the country who are trying to stop illegal immigration in their jurisdiction. And we've been battling it out in court, and I've worked with Senator Pierce before to draft other Arizona laws. And this law obviously is causing a bit of a national stir, but bottom line for me is it's legal. We're going to win in court with it, and it's going to make a difference in Arizona.
Well, Chris Kobach, I think you're now recognized as possibly the country's leading authority, you know, on the whole issue of illegal immigration. And, in fact, somebody that you've worked with very closely before, former Governor John Ashcroft of Missouri, our former Attorney General, I understand he's coming to Kansas in support of your candidacy in June, and I want to talk about that in a few minutes. But you are, you know, the leading expert in the country. As I read this Arizona law, straighten me out, Chris Kobach, on this, because there's been so much controversy associated with this law, and basically all we did was codify what the United States government did back in 1940 concerning
That's
illegal
right.
immigration, didn't we?
Yep, that's one of the things the Arizona law did, and you said it exactly right. Back in 1940, the federal government made it a federal crime for an alien in the United States to fail to carry certain documentation on his person. And that's been federal law for 70 years, and all the Arizona law did is said, if you are in violation of that specific federal statute, you're also in violation of Arizona law and it's a misdemeanor. So it mirrors federal law exactly, and the interesting thing is, apparently, President Obama was not aware of that federal law because he made his ridiculous statement, suddenly people are going to harass you if you don't have documents. What he evidently realized is there's nothing sudden about it. Any person who's without any documentation is already in violation of federal law. But, of course, he made a number of mistakes in mischaracterizing Arizona's law.
Well, Chris Kobach, if I go, you know, if I'm speeding, if I'm on the turnpike doing 79 and a 70 or whatever, if I get pulled over, the first thing that Highway Patrol is going to ask me for is A, proof of insurance, and B, a valid driver's license. All of us have to carry identification. If I cash a check at Dillon's, they're going to ask me, if they've got a new teller or a new cashier in there, they're going to ask me for identification. We all have to carry IDs.
That's exactly right. And perhaps even more relevantly, we all have to carry ID whenever we travel abroad. And that's really what we're talking about here. Much of the reaction around the world to this has been, so what's the big deal? That's what you do. When Americans go to foreign countries, the vast majority of foreign countries on the planet say you have to carry certain documents with you while you're here. And we are simply reflecting, we have reflected that international convention, and it's really no big deal. And the other point you mentioned about, you know, being stopped while speeding, that's the other big misconception about the law. The liberal open borders crowd has been saying, well, the law is going to empower police to just walk up to people and start interrogating them. No, the law actually says that if the police are enforcing another law, like a traffic citation or investigating a theft, if they're investigating another law and they make a detention, and at that point they decide the person may be an unlawfully present alien or an illegal alien, then they can contact the federal government and verify his status. It simply says to the police in Arizona, hey, while you're enforcing other laws, don't turn a blind eye to illegal immigration. And if you develop reasonable suspicion, act on it.
Why the major controversy? Because, again, what was passed in Arizona that you co-authored appears to be a very reasonable law. You would think this would be pretty much a slam dunk.
You know, you would think so. And that's a great question. Why the controversy? You know, I would put the question in this context. In 2007, Arizona passed a much broader, much more sweeping law, and that was the law that made Arizona the first state in America to require every employer in the state to use the E-Verify system, an internet system to confirm the work authorization of their employees. Really big law. In fact, every Arizona employee from the point of that law taking effect onward. Yet there was barely a peep about it in the national press. So, and by the way, that law was defended in court, and I helped defend it, and we won. Some of the same crowds said that law was unconstitutional, and they were wrong. So why the big difference with a narrower law? Why is there so much outcry over it? And my answer to that question is, I think it's because of politics. This is 2010, big election year, absolutely crucial election year coming up in the fall. And I think some groups, especially groups on the left, are trying to use the Arizona law as a way to motivate their base, because the base on the right is already extremely motivated. And I think they're trying, they're ultimately going to fail to use the Arizona law to get people to vote. You know,
Chris Kobach, are the conservatives handling this issue properly? You know, dealing with the Hispanic population base. Yeah, you know, I've seen so many polls, none real recent, but polls that I've seen in the past, showed that the Hispanic community is pretty divided on the issue of illegal immigration. You know, the Hispanics we're hearing from now, I mean, this is the radical fringe on the left. But why aren't the conservatives touting the fact that the majority of Hispanics, unless the polling numbers have changed, would not be in opposition to this new Arizona law?
Well, you know, you are starting to hear that, and you are correct. The majority of Hispanics are in favor of the law. And, indeed, I was speaking to one lady in Los Angeles who was just outraged that just last night, a Hispanic lady who was just outraged that the liberals in the Los Angeles City Council want to boycott Arizona when she says that she and other Hispanics who are proud to be American and who, you know, are proud of Arizona's law, frankly, and don't want to see illegal immigration, they want to support Arizona. You know, I think some conservatives are getting that message out. Others are just, some Republicans, I think, are just so afraid of talking about illegal immigration that they say nothing, they do nothing, and they end up being ineffectual. But, you know, the bottom line is this is about law, not about the race. And I think that's why people are coming around and recognizing, hey, this law is completely reasonable.
Chris Kobach, folks, if you just tuned in, he's my guest. He's a candidate for Secretary of State, somebody that I've known for 25 years or so. He's a good one. And also is known now as possibly the country's leading authority on the issue of illegal immigration. Chris, getting into the politics of Arizona, what's going to happen in the Arizona Republican primary for Senate? Because this is an issue basically that boils down to, it's an immigration primary. You've got on one side, J.D. Hayworth, that is making this the issue in the primary. Then you've got John McCain, who has said on many occasions that if America wants the GD fence, we'll build the GD fence. Who's going to win this?
Boy, you know, that's a tough one to call. I have been a big fan of J.D. Hayworth for so many years. He actually supported me when I was running for Congress back in 04, when, you know, someone who really came out and made the effort to contact me. And he's a great, great candidate on stopping illegal immigration. That said, you know, obviously I think the popular sentiment is very strong behind him right now. But that said, like, you got to factor in money. And John McCain has a ton of money in this primary, and he's calling in his chips. You know, people that he supported in the past are coming to support him. Boy, I don't know. In any race where you have one candidate who's got twice as much money as another candidate, you have to give the edge to the candidate with more money. And that's a sad thing about American politics, but I think it's just the way it is.
Yeah, you know, Sarah Palin endorsing John McCain, very, very disappointing. And along with Karl Rove, I've just about had enough of Sarah Palin as well. I don't understand her endorsement of McCain. You know, I understand.
Well, I think it's probably exactly that. You know, what I said about calling it, just the odyssey of McCain launched her current political career, and you know, she probably feels a bond of friendship or loyalty to that. So.
Yeah, I understand.
That's what I attribute that to.
Yeah, I understand her not coming out in opposition to McCain, but I think she would have been better off just staying out of Arizona. But having said that, the primary in Arizona is when, Chris Kobach?
You know, I don't have that date at hand. But
I'm not sure either, but it's got to be coming up in June, maybe?
I think June. My guess is, I'm thinking it's the second half of June, but I'm not 100% on that.
Yeah, Hayworth, somebody that's impressed me for years as well. I'm a strong, strong Hayworth fan. But let's get back to the Kansas primary, if we could. Chris Kobach, you had to be tearing your hair out taking a look at this legislative body we had this year as well, because one of the things they did dealt with illegal immigration. We've got this goofy law on the books, irresponsible law on the books, rewarding illegal immigrant kids that are going to our region schools of higher learning in Kansas. And we've spent so much time talking about this on the air. But there was an attempt to get this law off the books and bring Kansas back into a position of sanity.
Yeah.
The House voted down changing the law 50 to 70. 70 legislators believe in penalizing kids that have parents, unfortunately, that are citizens of this country, that don't live in Kansas, and we're rewarding criminal activity or illegal activity.
Yeah, and it's worse than that. Those 70 legislators want to keep breaking federal law.
Yeah,
there's a federal law that says you can't, no state can, give in-state tuition to illegal aliens. And so it's just absolutely insane. And as you know, I've litigated on this, and we, in California, won a case, which may made the point that this law is in violation of federal law. California has a very similar law to Kansas's. And, you know, the legislators are just either willfully breaking federal law or they're sticking their heads in the sand. Or I think, frankly, you know, let's be very frank about this. We have a number of Republicans in the state legislature who, if they were living in any other state, would call themselves Democrats. And they use the Republican name to get elected, but they are not truly Republicans in the way they vote.
Yeah, and Chris, I think it's time that the Republican Party in Kansas take a look at cleansing this party, if you will, because people said, you know, if you start giving litmus tests on fiscal responsibility, which I think is the cornerstone of what a Republican should be, is being fiscally responsible, that if we start giving that litmus test, we're going to destroy the Republican Party. Chris Kobach, the Republican Party is destroyed in Kansas already. You know, I was a legislator 18, 19 years ago. The same thing applied then. We had a group of us that were fiscally responsible. The Democrats controlled the process 20 years ago. The Democrats continue to control the process today because, as you said, we've got enough Republicans running, or enough Democrats running as Republicans. At the end of the day, the big spenders are going to win and have for 20 consecutive years in the state, if not longer.
Well, you know, and that tax vote this past week just really got my nerves up. I mean, you know, but let's think about this. You're right. Democrats have been abusing the Republican name and been running as Republicans for more than 20 years in this state. But finally, I think this, you know, the current events nationally are waking people up. Voters are angry, as they rightly should be, that people are abusing the Republican name and that they are straying from Republican principles. August 3rd is the primary. That is the date that every person listening to your show who is a Republican and is sick and tired of Democrats wearing Republican clothing, that's the time. You got to get out there and make sure you know who the true Republican is in the race and vote for him or her. Because we can take our party back. One by one, we're actually, you know, getting this party back to its principles, both in Kansas and nationally. You look, especially nationally right now, you look at the Republicans in Congress, they've got more backbone than I've ever seen in the last 20 years. But in Kansas, we can do the same thing. But it's so critical that at primaries, voters support those who believe in the true Republican principles of fiscal responsibility, respect for the rule of law and immigration, and, you know, the whole list of issues. But August 3rd is the date. I mean, that is where we take the party back, or we don't. And I think there's a very good chance that you will see a rhino Republican around the
Chris Kobach's my guest, and jim.cates at cjonline.com if you've got a question or a comment, and three emails, all of them basically saying, asking the same question, from Frank, Corey, and Jan. Okay, and to summarize it, this was a question I was going to ask anyway, Chris Kobach, so we'll ask it. Your campaign for Secretary of State, something I don't understand for the life of me, is getting into this voter ID question. How can anybody, in good conscience, say that a voter ID bill requiring somebody to show ID when they vote is a bad idea? Chris, do you differ with your two Republican opponents you're running against? You've got two Republicans running against you in the primary. Let's talk about this voter ID.
Well, let's make one asterisk there about my opponent. One of my Republican opponents in the primary is a former employee of the Kansas Democrat Party. Not just a member or voter, but an employee. So, again, another example.
That would
be Mr. Clays.
Okay, I don't know Mr. Clays, folks. I've never met the gentleman. He's out of Salina, I believe. That's about all I know about him. Okay.
Yeah, but the other two have said, they think voter ID. I've been very vocal about this. They think that voter ID, photo ID at the polls is a good idea too. But what they don't recognize, or what people need to know, is that this isn't going to be a walk in the park, just saying, okay, I favor photo ID, now let's do it. Just about every state that has passed a photo ID law, which we must have in Kansas to stop voter fraud, has been sued in the courts. The ACLU will come after Kansas faster than you could say photo ID. And you have to have a mindset of someone who's going to be able to litigate this and fight it and draft a law that will stand up in court. And, you know, I've actually already drafted the law that I'm ready to put on the floor of the Kansas legislature in January 2011 that will stand up in court. And since I fight the ACLU in court on a daily basis already, I'm quite happy to defend this law. So it's not going to be a walk in the park. It's going to be a tough fight to keep it in place. You know, the Indiana law, for example, the one that the Supreme Court voted 6-3 in Marin County versus Crawford to uphold photo ID requirements, that one is actually not in effect yet because there was a second lawsuit that stopped it on state constitutional grounds. So these people on the left are fighting tooth and nail to stop photo ID laws. I'm going to make sure ours will stick. You know, the other thing is, and this is something my opponents aren't saying, and we have to recognize this is a big piece of the puzzle of stopping voter fraud, is you have to stop registration of aliens to vote. Right now we've got a system based on trust. You check a box. Box says, yes, I am a U.S. citizen. But right now we're not requiring people to prove it. Well, we do what Arizona's, actually Arizona's the only state that does this right now, require people to prove their U.S. citizenship when they register to vote. And I think Kansas should do the same thing. I'm not going to opponents talk about it, but not even sure what their position is. I am absolutely certain that we must do this as well if we're going to stop voter fraud in Kansas.
Chris Kobach, let's take a look at the other side of the coin, because the arguments I hear out of the Democrats, and unfortunately all too many liberal Republicans, is that if we have a voter ID bill in place, there's going to be a lot of people voting today that won't be voting once we pass a voter ID bill. Who are these people?
Well, I don't know.
I have never had a good answer to that question other than people that shouldn't be voting in the first place. But, you know, that's been a Democrat argument, and they've really gotten a pass on this.
The U.S. Supreme Court knocked that argument down with Justice Stevens writing for the majority. So even liberal justices can knock that flimsy argument down. Look, we live in a society where everybody's got a photo ID. As you mentioned, you need a photo ID to catch a check, board a plane. Heck, you need a photo ID to buy the kind of Sudafed that works. I'll bet every single one of your listeners has a photo ID in their pocket if they're over the age of 18 or has one in the house. This is part of life in America. And furthermore, the law, when it is passed in Kansas, will have a provision for a person to get a free of charge state ID, even if they don't drive. You know, they can just go to a state office and get one sufficient for voting. So the notion that this somehow causes people to be unable to vote is simply false. And the Supreme Court has already said that as much in the case involving the Indiana law.
Okay, Chris Kobach, candidate for Secretary of State, Republican candidate. Primary election day, August the 3rd. We've got one of your Democrat opponents coming on the show. And by the way, speaks highly of you, Chris Steiniger, Senator Steiniger, a regular guest on this show. And he's vying for the Secretary of State nomination on the Democrat side of the ledger.
Great. Yeah, please ask him what he thinks about photo ID. Most Democrats, as you know, will resist the idea that we should have people prove their or present photo identification at the poll. And you know, the bottom line is, if we are serious about voter fraud, that is the single greatest step any state can take to stop voter fraud. But I'd be very interested in what his answer is.
Chris, you're headed to McPherson. Luncheon, appearance, I assume?
Luncheon and a parade.
Okay. I'm sure you're going to have a period. If you're going to a luncheon, there's going to be a Q&A, question and answer session. What questions are you getting from the voters in Kansas? Because I know you're blanketing the state now. You're covering the state. What are people asking? Is voter ID the issue? Illegal immigration? What are you hearing out on the ground?
Voter fraud and illegal immigration. I mean, illegal immigration is red hot right now. So, and especially since people know that I was one of the drafters of the Arizona law, they've been asking me a lot about that just in the last few weeks. It's just been all over the news. But, you know, people are concerned about voter fraud. You know, Acorn, remember, let's talk a little bit about Acorn. They were in the press constantly about 9 months ago with all these prosecutions of Acorn going on across the country, 14 different states. And many people don't know or have forgotten that Acorn had three offices in Kansas in 2008, one in Topeka, one in KCK, and one in Wichita. And just because they've changed their name doesn't mean they are gone. They are going to be out and active, and there is a good record, not good, I should say, there is a long record of voter fraud in Kansas in the last few election cycles, including in Shawnee County, I should add. And we have got to take this threat very seriously. And I think voters are waking up that, you know, our Constitution is under threat. But if we're going to take our Constitution back, we have got to make sure that the will of the people is respected at the polls. How do you do that? By stopping voter fraud, stopping organizations like Acorn, distorting and stealing elections.
Okay, let's go to back to the emails. Chris Kobach, Secretary of State candidate on the Republican side of the ledger, former state chairman for the Republican Party, and most importantly, the first winner of an Alf Landon Scholarship Contest back in 1983. I happened to be county chairman. When we awarded Chris Kobach a $500 scholarship, it was the first Alf Landon Scholarship ever given in Shawnee County, and that was my first contact with Chris Kobach. Okay, we just lost Chris. Hopefully he'll be giving us a call back. He's on the road, and he might have hit, he possibly hit a dead spot. But we just had a question that came in from Dwayne Rain, our good friend from Texas, and Dwayne... Okay, Will, let's go back to the phones. Did you hit a dead spot?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
All right, Dwayne Rain, former Shawnee County Republican chairman, by the way, just emailed us, but Dwayne, unfortunately, will not be voting for you in August as he's moved to Texas. But Dwayne just emailed us with a question, and this deals with illegal immigration. We've talked about this before on the show, but let's hear it from Chris Kobach. And it says, Jim, if a child is born in this country from an illegal alien, is the child a U.S. citizen?
Under current U.S. law, yes, the child is a U.S. citizen. Federal statute provides for that. But that's a big issue because many in Congress, including Representative Nate Steele of Georgia and others, have been supporting legislation to change that. Now, some people on the left will say, oh, but you have to award U.S. citizenship to people born in the United States, even if they are born to illegal alien parents, because they point to the 14th Amendment, they say. Well, the 14th Amendment only says, and this is a long debate, but to summarize it quickly, the 14th Amendment says all people born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. That was designed to ensure that the freed slaves were unquestionably deemed U.S. citizens. It was not the intent of the U.S. Congress to say that aliens in the United States without allegiance to the United States were U.S. citizens, whose parents were not allegiance to the United States were U.S. citizens. So that big debate will probably be fought in Congress if there is a new Congress that respects the Constitution. I think you'll probably see that legislation moving at some point in the future. But under the current Congress, with Obama's fans in there, in control, legislation like that will not be going anywhere.
Well, Chris, you also worked in the White House. You worked for John Ashcroft. And, folks, John Ashcroft is coming to Topeka on June the 10th, which happens to be filing deadline day if you want to run for an office in our upcoming Democrat and Republican primaries. But John Ashcroft is coming to Topeka in support of Chris Kobach. It happens to be on our filing deadline date of June the 10th. But, Chris, you worked for John Ashcroft. You've pretty much been on the ground from day one on this whole illegal immigration issue. But taking a look at this child issue, you know, kids born in this country, their parents are here illegally. You know, the argument is, well, we can't deport mom and dad because we're leaving little citizen Johnny and Susie behind. I doubt if mom and dad are going to leave little Johnny or Susie behind, they're probably going to take their child back to Mexico with them if they're deported, which means the child, upon reaching adulthood, can come back to the United States as a legitimate citizen. So, I guess, again, this far leftist argument, we're going to be separating families by deportation, again, is a bogus argument, isn't it?
It's a completely bogus argument. I myself know of cases where the families will take the child with them. Of course, that's what happens, and usually Immigration and Customs Enforcement takes pains to make sure that families are kept together. And a child who is born in the United States and has U.S. citizenship, in the vast majority of cases, that child will also have citizenship in his parents' country of origin, because most countries of the earth follow a practice called bloodline citizenship, which is you take on the citizenship of your parents, not the citizenship of the soil on which you were born, and the citizenship equating to that land. So typically, say someone born in the United States to Salvadoran parents will have Salvadoran citizenship and U.S. citizenship. When they reach the age of 18, they're in a very advantageous position. They have U.S. citizenship, which allows them to come to the United States anytime they want, and could be used at some point in the future to perhaps get a green card for members of their family. And yet they also have their citizenship of their parents' country. The notion that somehow we're separating families is false, and the notion that these kids are somehow suffering because they return to their parents' country of origin is also wrong, I would say, in most cases, because the kids end up with their family of origin, with their family in the family's country of origin, and they have this wonderful opportunity to come to the United States when they are, you know, when they reach majority status. I want to mention one thing real quick about the John Ashcroft event. It's going to be a luncheon if people are interested in coming. It'll be open to the public, and if you want to buy a ticket, you can go to chriskobach.com, K-R-I-S-K-O-B-A-C-H.com, and purchase a ticket, or you can even call campaign manager Ben Davis at 316-210-2450, 316-210-2450, but it'll be June 10th, the luncheon at the Holodome. And I think it's the first time Attorney General Ashcroft has spoken in Topeka, or at least the first time in a very long time.
Okay, that's coming up June the 10th, and I know you've got two Shawnee County co-chairs. I know both Tori Dreyer and Sammy Peck are co-chairing your campaign. Do you have an office open in Topeka?
We have an office in Topeka at 924 Kansas Avenue, and it's
okay, Chris, are you still with us? I think we just hit another dead spot. We're going to give Chris a chance to give us a quick call back, and then we'll go to okay. Two emails just came in from Terrence, and I'll be reading these in a minute. Hopefully, Chris will be giving us a call back, and we'll get to. Okay, Chris, I know you're hitting some dead spots.
We're back.
Okay, Chris, just a few more questions if we could, and we'll
sure.
let you go. This email just came in from Terrence, and let's get back to this illegal immigration question on dual citizenship, because Terrence asks, don't aliens' children born in the United States hold dual citizenship until they're 21? What
actually,
happens at 21?
Well, no, they'll hold U.S. citizenship. Under current federal law, the child of an alien who's born in the United States will hold U.S. citizenship for life. When they hit adulthood, they gain the ability to possibly use their citizenship as a platform to get a green card for family members.
Okay, so the dual citizenship... they would be dual citizens of Mexico and the United States for life. That child...
Yeah, unless the country of origin of the parents has... some of them have various rules concerning, like, say, you might have to serve in the, you know, do a year of obligatory military service, depending on which country you're talking about. So if they fail to perform those obligations, they could potentially lose their citizenship in the second country. But, by and large, they are going to be citizens of two different countries, the United States and some other country.
Okay. Chris Kobach, what's going to separate you from your two primary opponents, Libby Ensley and J.D. Clays?
Well, I think the most important thing is that I bring a law enforcement attitude, and as a lawyer and former counsel to U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft, we have to recognize that the Secretary of State is not just some job you put an administrator in and you have them just keep a steady hand at the tiller for the next 4 years. We've got changes we have to make. We have to get serious about stopping voter fraud. I have the ability to do this and have the determination to do this. I don't think anyone doubts that. And this is going to be a real contest between someone who's going to make sure that voter fraud is stopped in Kansas versus some people who think, yeah, that's something I'd like to do but may not be particularly concerned about it. And again, you have to make it stick. Just because you say, yeah, I support that law drafted in the legislature doesn't mean that law is going to stand up in court. I've got a law that will stand up in court, and I will defend it personally when the time comes.
Well, Chris Kobach, I know we'll be seeing you in the not-too-distant future. We'll certainly have you back on. It's been...
all right. Look forward to it.
It's been a pleasure. Chris Kobach, Secretary of State candidate. And again, folks, if you're interested in the Kobach campaign, his office is going to be open sometime by late next week, 924 Kansas Avenue. That's the address. And former Attorney General John Ashcroft is coming to Topeka on June the 10th, and if you know Chris, if you want to support Chris, it might be a good time to come out, or if you're an Ashcroft fan, tickets, you can pick them up I'm sure at the Shawnee County headquarters starting late next week, you can get your tickets there as well. All right, now into the Secretary of State's race, of course. For those of you that are longtime listeners of the show, you know how I feel about Chris Kobach. I think he would be a wonderful Secretary of State. That's where my vote is going to go, but that's not to say there's anything bad about Libby Inslee. I've known Libby Inslee for 25 or 30 years. Very nice young lady, does a very competent job as our Shawnee County Election Commissioner. But Chris Kobach, this is an individual, folks, that has been recognized nationally. I mean, this is one of the leading nation's experts. Very seldom do we have a candidate of Chris Kobach's character and capabilities and abilities come along. So, folks, I hope you'll consider that. And again, Libby Inslee, nothing wrong with Libby that I know, but Chris Kobach, his qualifications, my Lord, what a resume. The other candidate running, folks, I don't know. I don't know J.D. Clays from Adams. I'm sure he's a fine individual. I just don't know him. So we'll make some attempt if Mr. Clays contacts us. Of course, we'll certainly get him on the show. He'll have that opportunity as well. Karen Weichert's going to be joining me in a few minutes. We're going to be talking about Midland Hospice. And then coming in at 9 o'clock, we do have Jim Ogle, WIBW TV 13, along with John Arnold. And they're going to be joining us to talk about the top stories of the week, as they do each and every week on the show. Next Monday, we are going to have a special wrap-up show, legislative wrap-up show. And, folks, I served for 4 years in the legislature. I've been following the process. I have been involved for 30-plus years politically in this community. I don't think I've ever seen a worse assemblage of people than we had this year in our legislature. I mean, this was absolutely a disgusting performance. And, folks, there's a lot of good, well-meaning, well-intentioned legislators still in place. They're not all bad people. In fact, the people that I disagree with aren't necessarily bad people, but they just don't belong in the legislature. And we'll be getting into the reasons why. And there's about 14.5 million reasons why their performance was absolutely disgusting. $14.5 million of spending that was just absolutely out of control in a year to where, folks, we can't afford. This is no longer a laughing matter. Fiscal irresponsibility. There were years that we were flush with money and our legislators were just acting very irresponsible when it came to fiscal matters. But bottom line, the money was there, and what the heck, it's only tax money. Well, folks, it's not only just tax money anymore. There's no money. We're broke, along with 40 other states in this country. We don't have any money, folks. We're into a deficit situation. And this wild, out-of-control spending this year, folks, it was disgusting. Just absolutely disgusting. We're going to be talking about that later this morning. Stay tuned. More to come.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in Mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, L.A. Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Foss line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back. My home away from home. Of course, we're talking about Jeremiah Bullfrog's 29th and Wanamaker. What a great place to meet your friends for work. Or after work. Folks, for a nice, cool one. Yes, indeed. They have evening specials. And they've got 24-ounce beers for $2.75 on Mondays. Not bad at all. But, folks, they've got great food at Jeremiah Bullfrog's 29th and Wanamaker as well. 55 TVs. And if it's a televised sporting event, you can watch it at Jeremiah Bullfrog's 29th and Wanamaker. 55 TVs in there. Great place if you want to spend a nice romantic evening, possibly your anniversary's coming up. What a better place to go. You can watch the Royals. They're on a one-game winning streak. Or you can watch golf, ESPN, whatever's televised. I'll tell you, would that surprise your wife saying, hey, I know, honey, it's our 25th wedding anniversary tonight. We're going to go to Jeremiah Bullfrog's. We're going to get some buffalo wings, some hot spicy chili, and we're going to sit down and enjoy the Royals game. That would be an anniversary she would never forget. Jeremiah Bullfrog's 29th and Wanamaker. Good morning, Karen Weicker.
Good morning, Jim.
Been a while since I've seen you. How are you doing?
It's been about a year. I'm doing great.
Well, it's good to see you again.
Thank you.
How long
Thank
have you been with Midland Hospice?
Well, I've been with them about 20 years.
Has it been 20 years?
It has.
Right, I know.
I look too young for that, I know.
Yes,
but
you do.
Yes.
Yes, you do. You know, I've been on, hosting a talk radio show now for closing in on 14 years. In fact, I knew you before that. I knew Ivan, your husband, before that. So we've known each other for many, many years.
Yes.
Let's explain to our listeners. And maybe we have new listeners that's just unaware of what a hospice is, what it does.
Okay, well, Midland Care Hospice started in this community about over 30 years ago, in 1978, providing care to folks who were terminally ill who wanted to stay in their own homes. And we do it through a team approach of nurses, social workers, chaplains, home health aides, volunteers, and certainly our medical director overseeing all that medical care. We serve pretty much all of Northeast Kansas and even go as far down as Linn and Anderson County down south, over to the Missouri line and up to Nebraska. So we have a pretty big service area, and we've done that really in response to need. As people have called us and said, you know, my mom needs hospice care or my dad needs hospice care, would you come here? And we have responded to that and done so. Through the years, we've also grown our services beyond hospice because, again, people were calling us with questions about my dad's got Alzheimer's or my mom's had a stroke. Could they come to your center where we were providing adult daycare, which started in 1992 for hospice folks? But eventually, it has evolved into a program that just serves frail adults from the community who can't stay at home all day because it would be unwise or unsafe for them to be alone by themselves all day. So they can come to our adult daycare from 7:30 in the morning to 5:30 at night, 5 days a week. So that's been a tremendous service that has really grown to serve a lot of folks out there beyond what our hospice has been doing with the terminally ill. With the adult daycare, we took another step about 3 years ago, and we started providing a program called PACE, which is a program.
Let's get into this adult daycare now.
Okay, all right. All right.
Karen, insurance cover any of this? Or is there any insurance policy that would cover adult daycare? If so, how does that work?
Adult daycare is sometimes covered in long-term care policies.
Okay.
So if people
right.
have long-term care insurance,
okay.
adult daycare is one of the elements that often is covered.
Okay. All right. Real good. And that's 7:30 to 5:30. Now, you have some bed space at Midland Hospice as well. You're
uh-huh.
located at 415?
Nope. 200 Southwest Fraser Circle.
200. I don't know where I got. Okay.
200 I don't know
Southwest.
Where you got that, Jim. 200.
Because right, I have been there on several occasions. Okay. 2nd and Fraser. 200 Southwest Fraser Circle.
Correct.
And, folks, that's just right east of Gage Boulevard, just right north of 6th Street. It's the easiest way, I guess, to tell you. The old Medegar grounds.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Now, bed space at Midland. How does that work, Midland Hospice?
Well, at our on our grounds at 200 Southwest Fraser Circle, we actually opened an inpatient hospice about 10 years ago now.
Uh-huh.
And it's for folks that have care that's too complex to manage at home. The family just can't handle it. Maybe there's a pain issue or symptoms out of control. We can move them to our hospice house for either a temporary stay or longer, a little bit longer term if needed. But mostly our goal is to get them into hospice house and get them back home, if that's possible.
Okay. And again, getting into coverage for this, insurance?
For hospice care, actually, there is wonderful coverage for the most part. Medicare has a benefit, the hospice Medicare benefit, which is absolutely wonderful, and covers pretty much everything that a hospice would provide. Anything that pertains to the terminal illness would be covered under that hospice Medicare benefit. For folks going into the hospice house, there is an inpatient level of care also covered by Medicare. So for the most part, that's covered because predominantly our patients are Medicare folks. We do have folks who have insurance, and some of those have coverage for hospice care. Many times it's a very limited benefit. It might, you know, be for 30 days. It might be for $3,000 total or $5,000 worth of care. So many times insurance is pretty limited.
Now, if I've got Medicare,
uh-huh.
Because I've got aging parents, my parents are 95. They're in a retirement home in Topeka, and a very good one, I might add. I have no complaints at all with the quality of care they're getting. But if I wanted to move my mother or father over to hospice, that's covered under insurance as well.
Yes, now, I want to correct.
In fact, they're not getting any insurance coverage at the retirement home they're at now.
Right.
Because Medicare is not picking up their tab.
Correct.
This is coming out of their pocket. But if right. they move to hospice, then they get care. Does this have to come with a doctor's? How do you get
okay.
to the stage
yeah.
where
let
you
me
can
let
get
me correct
bed space?
That.
At,
First of all, if they're living in a nursing facility, we would our goal would be to help them to stay there because that essentially is their residence. And so we would help them to stay there. So we would put a team in.
Well, Karen, I'm sure we've got listeners now. The wheels are turning. Because of getting this covered under Medicare as opposed to out-of-pocket. So let's get
right,
into this.
Right.
And by the way, folks, there's a benefit for Midland Hospice tonight, and we're going to be talking about that in a few minutes
yes.
as well. But let's get into this whole bed situation at Midland Hospice.
Okay. Well, just remember, though, that I said for inpatient level of care, when care is too complex or symptoms are out of control. So it's not just for room and board. Room and board is not covered even at the hospice house under Medicare. It really has to be. There has to be a physical need
okay.
for it to be covered.
That so bed space, that bed, that's not covered under any Medicare policy.
Correct.
You're
that's
talking
correct.
About just care.
Exactly.
Once the patient's up, down going down the hallway, now coverage would start.
Exactly.
Once they go to the room, there's no coverage for that room. That's going to be an out-of-pocket expense, correct?
Usually, yes.
Okay, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
We do some fundraising for that because we do have folks who come in there who don't have insurance or have inadequate insurance uh-huh. to cover that. So that's where our fundraising, actually, that we're going to be talking about in a little bit, that's where a lot of that comes in.
Karen, you've got to have a waiting list a mile long, I would think. As far as your bed space.
Well, you know, it varies. It goes up and down. Sometimes we do have a waiting list, and sometimes we don't. Right now, we do not. But, you know, a few months ago, we did. So it really varies.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, if you're into an out-of-control situation, you know, a lot of times you get into Alzheimer's cases where you're dealing with somebody that's out of control because they just don't have the mental faculties. the understanding of not walking off. And there's a lot of things that can happen with somebody in the advanced stages of Alzheimer's.
Correct.
Now, my mother's in the beginning stages and been on medication for I don't know how many years. Still is in the beginning stages. I mean, they've really got it under control. She's not a problem, but I know so many instances to where friends of mine have parents but have gone through the advanced stages of Alzheimer's. You deal with Alzheimer's?
We do deal with Alzheimer's.
On your daycare center?
We do, yes, at our daycare center and also our PACE program.
Advanced Alzheimer's. So if somebody's in kind of that advanced stage of Alzheimer's, you can bring them out to Midland Hospice at 7:30 in the morning?
Now, I want to correct something here, Jim.
Okay.
It's Midland Adult Day Health. Those are not hospice folks that are coming to that. Those are separate from our hospice program. So that's Midland, the adult day program.
Okay, and the same building.
It's in a separate building. Out on our campus, we actually have three buildings. Boy, Jim, we ought to educate you. How many years have I been coming here? So it's actually a separate building.
I'm in the beginning stages
myself. It's a separate building, separate program. But we can bring folks out with Alzheimer's. Now, once they get to the point where they're wondering a great deal, need one-on-one, we probably cannot handle them there at the day center. So we would be looking for placement in one of our nursing facilities around town that maybe has a unit that would be more appropriate to their care if they're wandering a lot.
Okay, so if we've got a listener who has a parent or a relative or a friend, you know, that's gotten to that stage with Alzheimer's, they're getting rather difficult to handle. Don't just say, we're showing up Monday morning. Don't do that.
No.
You have to have some type of, I'm sure you check them out medically. You've got a physician maybe that takes a look at the situation.
Correct. You're going to
go through a process, evaluation process
exactly.
for you.
Exactly.
Except the individual. John Arnold just walked in. John, if you want to strap on the headphones. And I'm sure you probably know Karen Weikert.
Yes, hi.
Hi, John.
I thought you all possibly would know each other. And John's officially going to be with us after 9 o'clock talking about the top stories of the week. John, we're talking about Midland Hospice. They've got their annual fundraiser walk tonight, but we're talking about the basics of what a hospice does and everything else. So if you have a question, jump in.
Very important service provided for an awful lot of people, unfortunately.
Thank you.
How many people do you see?
In our hospice program, we serve about 1,000 patients a year.
1,000 a year?
At any given time in our programs, we've got about between 250 and 300 people in service.
Good night.
So we're taking care of a lot of folks on a day-to-day basis.
Now, Karen, does your funding come strictly from insurance and your fundraiser? Is there any government assistance, the city, the county, the state, federal government? Do they kick in to support our hospice programs?
Well, Medicare, you know, that's, of course, a federal program. Medicaid in this state also covers hospice today.
For patient care, direct patient
care.
For
patient care, correct. There's also a Medicaid waiver program that provides some funds for adult daycare. It's called Home and Community-Based Services, so there are some funds available for that. And as I said, long-term care insurance. There's also a veteran, some veterans coverage for adult daycare. So if anyone is out there thinking adult day might be something for them and they are a veteran, they might check into that as well, and we could help them to do that. So there is some. We get a little bit of funding from Shawnee County through some mill levy funds, and some from United Way, who actually contracts with us for some respite services for folks in the community. And then we get a small grant from Department on Aging as well.
Okay. All right. Karen, what's coming up tonight? Let's talk about your annual walk.
Well, tonight is our really big deal. It's called Dash of Life, Celebrate the Dash. It's our annual event where we hope to raise about $125,000 tonight. It's a walk-a-thon around our grounds. So we have music and food and a children's area, and it really is about celebrating life. We do have parking available along Fraser, in the businesses along Fraser, and also at 6th and Oakley, at Hummer on the 6th and Oakley side, and then over at Hayden. And then we'll be running shuttles to pick folks up because we don't allow parking on our grounds that night.
Okay. John, I know you participated in a golf tournament, the Butch Felker Memorial Golf Tournament. Now, I believe Butch, wasn't he with hospice toward the end of his life? Or can you talk about that? Is that something that Or are we getting into medical confidentiality on this?
Yeah, we try not to talk about the folks that we've served, but we've served a lot of people in this community.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Okay, because I've heard so many comments from so many people that have been served by Midland Hospice, you know, survivors.
Right.
Surviving members of the family.
Well, the reality is what we do touches
So we'll let the comment
everybody.
About Butch Felker go for now, but believe you me, folks, there's been so many that have been served toward the family just has glowing comments and remarks to make about your services.
Well, thank
we'll
you.
Let it go with that.
Thank you. Thank
okay.
you, Jim. Thank you.
Okay. 125,000, that's your goal
Correct.
This
Correct.
Evening. Last year when you were on the show, had we gone over $100,000? How many years have we been going over $100,000?
We've been going over...
As far as this event that you're having tonight.
I would say the last 5 years we've been going over $100,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been very successful. We have some good corporate sponsorships.
Why don't we give a plug to some of the major corporate sponsors?
Let's do that. Pinwell Gable and, of course, Wren and Teresa Newcomer are our honorary chairs this year. They've done a fantastic job helping us. Capital Federal, Bartlett & West, Hills, Wolf Construction, West Star, St. Francis Health Center and Stormont, MC Industries, Fast Signs has been doing a wonderful job helping us with a lot of our banners, Kennedy & Co., MC Industries, Wally Shrimp Construction, the Potawatomi Prairie Band Tribe has helped us a great deal, Intrust Bank. Just a myriad of folks that have helped us a great deal to make this a success. Western Associates has done a lot of our work for us and some in-kind. So just a ton of folks.
That's an impressive list.
It is an impressive list. I think, again, that speaks to the fact that we do touch everyone in the community at some level. So we have a lot of good support out there.
Yeah, you certainly do. Now, again, this kicks off when? What time this evening?
It starts at 6:30 tonight.
Okay.
And two special things that will happen during the evening I want to point out. One is a butterfly release that we do at about 7:30. Mm-hmm. And it is for all those folks we've served in this last year. We invite them all to come back and release a butterfly in memory of someone. So we have 60 dozen monarch butterflies.
60 dozen?
Yes,
wow.
That we'll be releasing. It's a beautiful event. It's going to be a lovely evening. So after the families that we've invited back get their butterflies, then we disperse them around the other folks that are there.
Yeah.
Lovely thing. We also will, at the closing, about 8:30, be reading the names of all those people for whom a donation has been made. And those donations are represented by the luminaries that will line our walk that night. Mm-hmm. So we'll read those names just to remember those people. Our names are so important. And it's amazing the power in those names when we read them and how it touches people's hearts when they hear names of friends and sisters, brothers, you know, grandparents, people that they've loved and lost. It's pretty powerful.
How many names will you be reading?
I don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing probably close to 800.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys talked about this before I got here, Jim, but how big an operation is hospice? Number of employees, total budget?
We have...
Because I know it's good size.
It is pretty good size. We have about 140 employees.
That's good size.
Yeah, that is good size. And as I said, we do serve a lot of eastern Kansas. We have an office in Council Grove. One in Lawrence. We've been serving the Lawrence community for quite a long time, actually. And then we have one in Ottawa, where we've been since 1994. So,
okay.
And those are care teams primarily. Most of the administration is done from Topeka, so that we can just keep those, our nurses, our social workers, chaplains, home health aides are in those particular offices, so they can have better access and faster access to the patients and families.
Yeah, excellent. Good stuff.
Thank you.
And again,
thank
just
you.
Show up this evening.
Just show up. You don't have to call, but you certainly can if you'd like. And you can go to our website at www.midlandcareconnection.org, or you can call at 232-2044, or you can show up. And all of those things are acceptable.
All right. Karen, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Best of luck this evening. I hope you hit your $125,000.
I'm sure we will.
Hope you get good news media coverage also.
I hope we do, too.
You bet. Well, maybe you'll have WIBW TV 13 out this evening.
You know,
never know.
I'm going to be on there at noon today.
Are you?
Yes.
Well, that's a wonderful station. They've got a great, great general manager.
Yes, they do.
Vice president and general manager. In fact, he just walked in the door, so we'll suck up to him.
Okay.
I love pandering. Thank you.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Karen, good to have you with us. And again, Midland Hospice.
Thank you,
John
Jim.
Arnold, Jim Ogle on deck. We're going to be talking about the top stories of the week. It's all coming up on the Jim Cade Show. Stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Foss line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim. Okay, we are back. Cooper Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, 267-4100, folks, 24-hour-a-day plumbing service. So if you have that unforeseen emergency, make sure you've got this number written down, 267-4100, because, folks, again, hopefully you're not going to have that plumbing backup at 4 o'clock on a Sunday morning and the family's on the way over in about 3 or 4 hours. But if it happens, there is help right around the corner. Johnny on the spot. Cooper Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, 267-4100. And again, an official hello to John Arnold and Jim Ogle. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Jim. Johnny on the spot, huh? For a
Johnny
plumber?
On the spot. How do you like that?
For a plumber. Huh? Johnny on the spot.
It's a good thing.
Was that clever or was that clever?
While you were off, John was chatting about Betty White saying how she thought Facebook was a colossal waste of time. I just know that from my Facebook friends, I know of about four of them that had flooded basements yesterday that would have needed Johnny on the spot.
Oh, my.
With the heavy rains that we had Wednesday evening. I guess it was Wednesday evening,
and we've
right?
got more rain coming in tomorrow. In fact, for the next 3 or 4 days, the forecast, I'm sure.
I thought tomorrow was okay, but...
50%
no, today's okay. Tomorrow and Sunday are.
Yeah, today's the day to go out and do fun stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you can catch Jeremy Goodwin. Well, you can't catch Jeremy on the weekends. Nah, he's going to be off somewhere. But at any rate, the forecast in the Capital Journal this morning says 50% chance of rain tomorrow, a high of 65 degrees. It's going to be chilly this weekend for this time of the year.
It was only 53 this morning when I was coming down.
Yeah. You know, that's chilly for this time of the year.
It is.
In fact, we can make that one of the top stories of the week, if you so choose, because, John Arnold, we're going to start with you. Top story of the week, through the eyes of John Arnold.
Well, I think there's several top stories. I think the nomination of Kagan as Supreme Court Justice is an important story.
Ah!
I think the oil...
I just had Chris Kobach on the show.
Oh.
And Chris was on. He was on his way to McPherson, joined us by phone for 45 minutes. That was a question I wanted to ask Chris Kobach.
Ah.
Because Chris is a right of center, a strong fiscal conservative, certainly has some... feelings about the issue of illegal immigration.
Uh-huh, yes.
What a great question that would have been for Chris Kobach, and I had every intention of asking it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, too late. But she has the reputation, John Arnold, as I understand it, a rather unique appointment everything goes through, because she's viewed as somewhat of a moderate. Who would have anticipated this out of the Obama administration?
Well, yeah, Kathleen Perker has a nice column in the Capital Journal this morning, and Bill Roy... I had an advanced copy of his column that goes, I think, on Sunday. And
Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And they both talk about the fact that Kagan is the third woman on the court, and that's precedent-setting. But they're all three of the women are from New York, some different parts of New York City. And there now are three Jews and six Catholics on there. No Protestants and nobody who didn't go to Harvard or Yale Law. And you sit there and you say, really, is this diversity? No. It's not diverse in terms of points of view or life experiences or geography. Kathleen Parker makes a really good point about that in her column today. And Bill hit the whole thing about the Harvard and Yale connection that's maybe not in our best interest to have a Supreme Court that is totally dominated by Harvard and Yale. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I suspect some of the Midwestern-type senators will ask her questions. You know, Sotomayor, for example, had lots of questions about the diversity of her experience, life experiences,
uh-huh,
adding to the court. And maybe they'll do the same with Kagan. I don't know. But it's an interesting story. I think that the oil continues to be a big story. And the third big story locally here is our state legislature managed to pass a budget and get together. And
we'll come back. We'll come back to those two.
I figured you'd kind of want to. Yeah.
We'll come back. But let's get to Jim Ogle's comments on, you know, the Kagan nomination.
Well, in terms of Kagan, that little story that they talk about, how you can sit in a bathtub and slowly turn up the temperature and not know that you're eventually boiling to death, so to speak.
The frog.
Well, we're boiling frogs when it comes to the Supreme Court, because slowly, it's not that any one of those people is not qualified, I think. It's that we've now had three different presidents make selections that have validated that the only people you care about are Harvard or Yale. We've eliminated the diversity of thought. And while I'm not unsupportive of Kagan, and I think it's unfortunate she has to bear this burden in terms of determining her own qualifications and whether she should be able to serve or not, the fact that it's all Ivy League, and whatever kind, and clearly, as you look at the people who are, you know, they're all from New York, who's the fourth New Yorker? Scalia. Now, clearly, he's not the same
philosophical
mindset as the others, but, you know, I am uncomfortable. I don't think that there should be a geographic test. I don't think that there should be. But when you see all the factors going one direction or another, then it becomes a concern, and I clearly hope that in the future that there's more awareness of there may be other people who you know, I think of the importance Justice Harlan played at the end of the 19th century. He was the dissent in Plessy versus Ferguson and things like that. You know, he came from a very theoretically backwoods Appalachian Mountain, Harlan County, Kentucky, and was an extraordinary jurist. You know, this perception that only if you punch your ticket there. Heck, I believe there's some pretty... We've had some pretty good people from Stanford, like maybe the Chief Justice Rehnquist and maybe the first woman, Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yeah.
I mean, can't you even spread out to the Pac-10? and, you know, I think that there's a really a it's disappointing. I think Kagan. I mean, she if she can be Solicitor General, she sure can be a Supreme Court Justice. I think.
Oh, sure.
And I think that too often this silly game of trying to force them to pre-decide cases as part of their hearing process and use them as gotchas. Yeah, you're not even required to be a lawyer to be on the Supreme Court according to the Constitution. And I'm not so certain that we wouldn't benefit at some time for having another politician.
Well, that's what I like about Kagan, because her legal resume is pretty thin, which isn't a bad thing. Again, I wasn't aware of Kathleen. I didn't read Kathleen Parker's column this morning. And I just became aware a couple of weeks ago that our Supreme Court, you know, we're looking at three Jewish, six Catholics. Now, I'm not that deeply religious of a person. You know, as far as being a regular churchgoer,
but a lot
my
of the
wife
country
keeps
is.
Telling me I need to be. But the point being, where's the Protestant representation?
Sure, a lot of the country
well,
is.
Well, we had almost 200 years of 100% Protestant representation on the
true.
Supreme Court, followed by a single Jew for 40 years, followed by two Jews and then a Catholic. I mean, I don't mind if the pendulum swings on some things. We're probably not going to get a good mix of right and left-handers either along the way. But I do think that when you tip too far in one direction, you need to remember the other people who aren't there. And that's where I think it comes in. I don't think there ought to be a litmus test.
Yeah. I happen to be Protestant, but Lord knows when I was a kid, you know. I dated the Catholics. Fun-loving group. Yes. Nothing against Catholics, certainly not. This nomination obviously is on a fast track. I can't see any opposition coming from the right of center because, again, I think the right of center crowd is pleasantly surprised that we have potentially a moderate that's being appointed to the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah, but
by President Obama. I mean, it could have been so much worse through the eyes of a conservative.
But you know they're not going to give him a pass. They're going to make her look like she's the first cousin of Satan.
Sotomayor pretty much got a pass, though, wouldn't you
say?
Well,
she didn't get treated too badly. But
yeah. Well, there were 2.5-3 weeks there where she was being pummeled and then came third. Yeah, I think that this will be a fairly close vote, like 58, 57 to 43, 44. And so in terms of the history of nominations, that's a close vote.
Yeah.
But once that vote's over, it doesn't matter what the vote was.
It doesn't.
They're justice for life unless they can be impeached.
And again, that's something we've talked about on the show. Do we need to change that? Do we need a constitutional amendment saying no more federal judicial lifetime appointments?
I don't know. It's one of the arguments is that it makes them more independent and able to be the third branch of government without any needing to kowtow to the administrative branch or the congressional legislative branch. And it's probably, it's worked for 225 years, I suppose. So.
I suppose. But, John Arnold, you know, the other side of the coin, now that we're viewing the Constitution as a living, breathing document, where basically we can interpret the Constitution any way we want to fit our particular political philosophy, then this group of nine people, they become very, very, very powerful.
Oh, yeah.
Extremely powerful. More so today than 50 years ago.
Sure.
Yeah, because of the way that we're now interpreting the Constitution.
Well, and it's going to be more and more difficult as you go forward because technology is expanding, exploding everything. I mean, what's freedom of speech nowadays in the internet world and with the Blackberries and iPads and bloggers and all of that? What's the right to privacy to keep me from saying something about you, Jim, that's totally slanderous?
And since we're talking about the nine most powerful individuals in this country, should we have somebody 85, 90 years old serving on our United States Supreme Court? The energy level at 90 isn't what it was at age 50 or 60.
Then I'll take you back to Betty White hosting Saturday Night Live on Saturday night, 88 and a half years old.
Pretty good energy level.
You know, I think that while in general that's true, there have been extraordinary minds served well into that period of time. I certainly don't want Strom Thurmond in his last 10 years of life barely able to function, be part of the Supreme
Court.
That
was the example I was going to give with Strom Thurmond. There was a time that he was a very effective, influential senator.
Extraordinary. Effective.
But he stayed in Congress for 20 years after that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't think that we have a systemic problem with that, and that I would not want to mess with what has been 235 years of success in terms of how those things are. Certainly the pendulum swings back and forth, but I would maintain that a Supreme Court in the 1850s that rules that that Negroes are still property if they've been slaves, a Supreme Court that rules in the 1890s that separate but equal is still appropriate, were very powerful, that shaped the course of American life in very dramatic ways, just as this Supreme Court does now. I think that we just not are living in those times where those extraordinary things occurred. And how times change, you know, while it was a controversial decision, the Dred Scott decision had some remarkable support. And if you go back and read the archives of newspapers and stuff like that, I'm not saying it was right. I'm just saying that if you make the argument the Supreme Court is more powerful now, I would maintain that the Supreme Court is probably comparable to the power shown either by the Warren Court or to those times like the 1890s or the 1850s when they were making rulings that helped lead us into civil war.
Okay, Jim Ogle, WIBW TV 13, John Arnold. In fact, John, I saw your blog this morning. I haven't read it yet. This morning I was logged down with a lot of it.
Oh, what'd you see, The Perfect Game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read that yet. Jim Ogle, let's get to your top story of the week, which would be
Mark Parkinson rules the world. Okay.
He doesn't want to.
But when Mark Parkinson started this process, what did he call for?
Tax 1% increase.
Sales tax increase.
And?
Balanced budget.
And to not cut anything more in education. At
True.
The end of the day, where are we?
Exactly right there.
What he proposed in his state of the state message.
An unelected governor, certainly he was elected lieutenant governor, an unelected governor with no apparent political power base, natural political power base, a former Republican who is hated by a section of the Republican Party for his leading, is an extraordinarily gifted politician. It is a shame for the state. I'm not saying that I want Mark Parkinson to be governor for the next 4 years to change his mind and run. It's a shame for the state that a man is gifted at him in the arts of politics in building consensus isn't still going to be available to the people of Kansas in some way. At least for the next 2 years he won't be, and everything that he and his wife say would indicate that he's not going to.
Jim, I think you give him some short shrift when you call him a politician. I don't think he is a politician. I think he's a leader.
A very good point.
And he hasn't played the political game at all. I mean, that's what his strength comes from. We're so pleased to have somebody who's not out there trying to feather his cap in his nest and so on, but trying to say, let's solve the problem, folks.
Or the most political thing you could do right now is not be a politician.
Yeah, well, there's some irony there. Yeah.
And I think that, and both he and the lieutenant governor he appointed, and I still think it's one of the weirdest things in the world, that we don't have a provision that deals for how you replace our lieutenant governor. It just happens, and it's never legally challenged. I think about how that would happen in other states, and it'd be tied up in lawsuits for years, but we somehow have done this, and we've done this repeatedly this way. But, you know, Governor Parkinson has been extraordinarily effective at a difficult time. I think, I look back, and I think history in the long run, many decades removed, will treat Gerald Ford that way in terms of how he navigated a difficult time under difficult circumstances. Now, clearly, Parkinson wasn't put in place out of scandal, but certainly, he stepped in at a time that this state has had significant problems and he's provided a steady hand and leadership.
Yeah.
Some of the things that those who would support him if he were to continue in office were having fits, the compromise on the power plants out west.
The whole compromise.
And that's like the first thing he did.
Yeah.
So,
he did it like in his first month or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So I just, hats off to him on his ability to forge and to also draw lines. You know, how an unelected governor who will not run again can dictate to the legislature, and that's what he ended up doing at the end of the day, that this is going to be the basis. These are the three things that are the basis of what the budget. And he has no majority in either house, and he pulls that off. Now, that's gift.
By the way, speaking of Mark Parkinson, coming up Monday, I'm going to give a plug Monday to what we've got coming up. We're going to have a special 10 o'clock show. Normally, we're on for 2 hours Monday. Monday, we're going to be on for three. We're going to have a legislative wrap-up show. A couple of legislators coming in. But prior to that, Bob Beatty's coming on at 9 o'clock. This is an issue that Bob and I have agreed to disagree on for many, many, many months. But keep in mind, folks, Bob Beatty was the individual long before Joe Biden was tabbed as the VP nominee. Bob Beatty predicted it was going to be Joe Biden before I had heard the name Sarah Palin. Bob Beatty said Sarah Palin is going to be John McCain's running mate. I was unfamiliar with who Sarah Palin was at the time. This guy...
How did Bob pull that out of the hat?
I'm telling you. he's got the knowledge. I don't know. But he called Sarah Palin long, long, long before the Republican convention. And
He must have called her when she was mayor of Wasilla.
Or had seen a picture of her, maybe. I don't know.
There you go.
But at any rate, Bob Beatty has been very, very consistent saying that Mark Parkinson, come June the 10th, the filing deadline, is not going to be on a ballot anywhere for anything. I have agreed to disagree. I still think at the 11th hour, Bob Beatty is going to be a candidate for the United States Senate. Mark Parkinson.
Yeah,
Mark Parkinson will be a candidate for the United States Senate running as a Democrat. It's still think it's going to happen. So at any rate, folks, you'll hear that debate coming up Monday. And Bob Beatty recently returned from Great Britain. He was over basically to view the Great Britain elections, and he's got quite a story to tell there as well.
That'll be interesting.
How that impacts America.
He does a good job of looking at those elections and analyzing them.
Yes, indeed. Jim Ogle, I was very, very, very unhappy with our legislators this year. I think in the 30 years I've been involved in politics, I can't remember a worse year in Kansas in terms of fiscal responsibility.
I was going to say, but we got
that, I agree with
we
you.
Got a state grass out of the deal, didn't we?
I think we did.
I'm not certain what it was, but they all came around that very quickly, picking a state grass.
On the other hand, as a fiscal conservative, Jim, I'm very appreciative of the legislature for being fiscally responsible and paying their way, figuring out they have to raise taxes, they can't make all those cuts work. They've got to do some more. And they did it in the short term. At least that's the ostensible approach that it will be rolled back.
Well, I think we're all in agreement. Mark Parkinson demonstrated some leadership abilities, especially when he made the statement, a week and a half ago. He said, I'll veto anything that doesn't have a tax increase as part of it to balance this budget.
Pretty
and
gutsy.
I thought,
pretty
it
gutsy.
Was and all.
And the thing is, it was not, for all his skills, Barack Obama, as our president, hasn't shown his ability to shut up. He, for the first year of his administration, if there was an issue, he was out in front of it. He was the only spokesman that had any credibility for his administration, and so he's constantly hectoring about everything. And he's had success in finally getting something that we call health care reform through. But in comparison, Parkinson gave a very impressive state of the state.
No notes.
Directly from the heart.
Done, yep.
He gives another speech like that. He didn't sit there every day threatening, jumping in front of people and everything. But he had an exquisite sense of timing as they sat there facing these deadlines, expressing his disappointment they left without knowing what they were going to do. But I can tell you, if you come back and you don't include the tax increase with it, I'm not going to let you go home.
Yeah.
Leadership plan on abilities. Spending your summer here.
Yeah. Topeka's beautiful in the summer. Extend your leases at the Senate Suites.
There you go.
But I think that it was just a great use of timing. A great use of timing. I would, based on what he and his wife have both said, I would be stunned if you're right, Jim, on this. I think Kansas would be better served if he were part of our process and still standing for a significant office in this state.
I just remember when I served with Mark in the legislature, I was on my way out as he was on his way in. But we did serve for 2 years together, and he's a very charming, very affable, very likable, very intelligent individual. But I remember at the time that he had a lot of interest in Washington, D.C. Now, Mark Parkinson's second generation, maybe the third, lobbyist in Washington. You know, this isn't the Parkinson's first rodeo as far as Mark. Mark cut his teeth on politics. And with his interest in Washington, D.C., I still think at the 11th hour, there's going to be enough pressure put on Mark Parkinson to run for something. He's made it pretty clear. He doesn't want to live in Cedar Crest. I don't think that's his ultimate goal, is to be a four-year resident of Cedar Crest. But going back to the big league power source, it won't surprise me at all if Mark Parkinson is a declared candidate, yeah, filed candidate for the U.S. Senate. Real quick, here are emails. Let's see. Kevin McGinney just emailed us, and he's home listening today. I just wanted to say hi. Kevin, love you to have you do more than just say hi. Weigh in on our conversation if you have an opinion, because I know Kevin McGinney.
He always has an opinion.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Okay.
And that's fine.
Getting into the legislative process, the thing that upset me the most about this whole process, I thought it was fiscally irresponsible because, again, we did very, very little to stem the tide of government spending. State employees, 6,000 state employees are getting a raise this year. You can point to state after state after state after state to where they're either furloughing state employees or they are reducing salaries by 5%, 10% in order to hold the line on government spending. Because this is an election year, I suppose, 6,000 state employees are getting a raise in the state of Kansas. If there was any year to where we shouldn't be granting raises to state employees, this would be the year. Upsetting as hell, it's just so fiscally irresponsible. But the thing that upsets me the most is our comprehensive transportation package that passed. We got a $13 billion budget. We passed an $8 billion transportation package.
Over 10 years.
Yes, it's going to be bonded over 10 years.
Yeah.
Deb Miller was a guest on this show prior to the legislative session. She comes on two or three times a year. Very bright, very charming, very focused. We talked about a transportation package, and she said, yeah, we're going to toss one in the hopper. We need to get Kansans thinking about our next major transportation package. So we're going to throw one in the hopper this year just to get the voters thinking about it, give the media a chance to take a look at what we want to do long term. Nobody saw this train coming down the track. As far as passage of an $8 billion bill, there wasn't 3 hours of public debate on our transportation package, I don't think, this year. It was lightly debated. Nobody saw a passage of an $8 billion transportation package this year. Totally irresponsible fiscally.
Well, I don't know, Jim. I think
it's driven me to drink. And by the way, Jeremiah Bullfrog's turning. great sponsor of the Jim Cates Show.
Oh, now that is a transition.
Shameless, perfectly shameless. Jim, $8 billion. When I was doing my highway project in Denver, we did a study, or actually we accessed a study from the Federal Reserve in Chicago. This would have been in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
They basically said that any construction, this was a conclusion by an economist who studied it for some time, and he said new construction of highways create 7 permanent jobs for every $1 million of construction. 7 permanent jobs. That's not highway jobs, but other jobs, spinoff jobs. And that's a lot. That's a lot of economic development. If you take $8 billion over 10 years, that's a lot of jobs. I can't do the number in my head, but
It should be. Yep. That's 5,600 or something like that. I don't know. It's a lot of jobs. And maybe that's what the legislature was looking at, besides the fact that we have road problems in this state, and not just in the city of Topeka and the city of Lawrence, but all over. Because it's been kind of a tough winter, and we haven't spent enough money.
John Arnold, we'll go to Jim Ogle, but real quick, this $8.2 billion, do you have any idea where it's going?
I don't.
How it's going to be spent?
No, as you said,
I don't think anybody in the legislature does either, and that's my point, because I was there 20 years ago when we passed the first comprehensive highway program.
Right.
And we knew exactly what we were spending it on, you know, where the improvements were going to be made. We knew that in Topeka and Shawnee County, we were going to improve the I-70, I-470 connection. We knew that we were going to four-lane 75 highway north of Topeka to Holton. We knew that we were going to construct the Oakland Expressway.
Right.
This go-around, nobody has a clue as to where we're going to spend $8.2 billion.
I sure haven't read anything about it. Yeah.
It was never debated at length on the House floor or the Senate floor. I mean, this thing was just rammed through.
Deb Miller must have submitted a package that said, okay, these are the projects we need to do. And it must be out there in some kind of a book.
Call your legislator.
Well, I will tell you the presentation that the Transportation Department did for a variety of us that were invited to the chamber to see, it didn't point to any particular project. It pointed to two very important, I think, very important facts. The reason Kansas has at least one publication said the best roads in the country right now is because Jim Cates and his colleagues in the legislature 20 years ago set us on a path with a comprehensive plan one cycle.
Thank you for that, Beth.
Then 10 years later...
I guess Jim's voice.
then 10 years later, a completely different group does the same thing again, mm-hmm. and our end result is that unlike a lot of states, our overall transportation infrastructure is really good. Rated by those who attempt to make some form of rating is certainly among the top five, and one publication in attempting to do that, Reader's Digest, labeled us number one. In order for us to continue, I think it's unsexy for us to invest in basic infrastructure. Most places find ways, like the city of Topeka did, not to pay for it as you go, in the maintenance and everything. Yet there's like brushing your teeth and flossing, paying for this stuff as you go, is in the long run the least painful way to deal with it. And how many, you know, John, how many municipal water and sewer systems are failing EPA standards across this country because people don't invest in that because they put it off a year and then another year and then another year and another year. And we have more than 50% of the water systems in this country in bad shape because they didn't pay to keep them up. I really believe in pay as you go. The important question is I support the principle of the concept. It would be nice to know where it's going.
Well, and Jim, you know, it gets back to the traditional political debate. In years past, we would have known exactly where we're going because we might agree to disagree on this issue, whether we really need to improve the I-70 loop around downtown Topeka. But the point being, 10 or 20 years ago, before there would have been one Shawnee County legislator, Republican or Democrat, voting for an $8.2 billion package, that damn sure would have been in the bill. we would have locked in. Okay, we want to make sure we're getting our fair share of the money.
Sure.
And that didn't happen this year.
He got passed without pandering and selling out projects to individual areas to get votes. How did that happen?
Well, is it funded totally by the fuel tax, Jim? Because, you know, frankly,
the sales tax that we passed, of course, the 1% sales tax, that's going to be a 1% tax until 2013.
Right.
And then that reduces to 0.4 cents, which is going to go for highway construction, highway repairs.
Okay, fine.
If there's such a thing as a tax over sunsetting.
But
this is going to be a bonded process.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about bonding for the highways.
Yeah, and that's okay. The city of...
Well, but, John, here's another point, and I want to turn it over to you.
that we missed the boat on this $8.2 billion that we're going to spend. You know, and I've been talking about passenger air service in and out of Topeka for years on the show. There is no excuse whatsoever that our community leaders have not gotten behind passenger air service, promoting passenger air service, seeing what we can do to attract, an air passenger service to Topeka. We haven't done a very good job of that. In fact, it's been miserable. There's $5 million a year that's doled out every year. Wichita has their hand in the bucket. They're pulling out the lion's share of it, basically to subsidize airlines flying in and out of Wichita. I've had legislators on this show from Shawnee County. I've asked each and every one of them over the past 90 days, has anybody in a leadership position from this community asked you to go on the floor of the House to the Transportation Committee to get our fair share of this money? Nope. Haven't heard from anybody. So our legislators, it's not that they're not doing an effective job. Where's the leadership in this community to ask for that money? It's never been done. Wichita is walking off with all the money, virtually all the money. Manhattan's getting their share now.
Yeah.
And Manhattan now has passenger air service.
Amazing. I guess another hour away from the airport makes a difference. I think that's part of the deal. We're just too close to Kansas City.
I think that in as we've talked about this before, Jim, I think that we are handicapped by our geography. We're trying to attract what is the this decade's equivalent of the steel industry to locate a new mill here. You know how healthy the steel industry was in the 70s, right? Well, how healthy? What was the accumulated loss among airlines last year? It was something like $4.8 billion?
It was significant.
I mean, the reality is trying to get air service in here and to subsidize it when people can just drive to Kansas City and buy $49 flights on Southwest to get to places.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Let me ask the question, and we'll move on to another topic, but Jim Ogle, if we would have attracted, this nonstop passenger air service, nonstop from Topeka to Dallas, rather than Manhattan, Kansas getting it, somebody flying out of Manhattan, because this is a successful route, they're doing a very, very effective job.
They've doubled the number.
Yeah. Have we, if we would have attracted this particular airline, do you think people from Manhattan would have bypassed Topeka to drive another 70 miles into KCI? To say geographically, we're not well located, that's an excuse, in my opinion. It's excuse making because at the very least we could attract these people that are flying out of Manhattan, which is an airport that is not comparable to what we have in terms of beautiful terminal, long runway. We've got it all here in Topeka. If we would have aggressively gone after that airline, the same number of people flying out of Manhattan nonstop to Dallas would be driving to Topeka to do the same thing.
Then they'd have to look and see what the cost is of driving on to Kansas City. As Jim says, if you can get a $49 Southwest flight versus a $200 flight out of Topeka.
$800.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
$800. The kind of flight you would get put out of here would be in the neighborhood of $600, $700, and $800.
Wow.
And so we're asking. So for a very few number of flyers, this is what's so interesting to me about this argument, Jim, because you're so responsible with money. For a few number of flyers, having government pay for them to be able to fly and pay only 25 cents to park all day or whatever it is, $1.25, something like that, out there, when they can go to Kansas City and fly out, just seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
Until something changes about how air travel is working in this country, or that we see that we can't get certain businesses to locate here because we do not have native passenger air service out of here, then I think you've got a good argument. But I've never heard in the discussions of why we're winning or losing different businesses that passenger air service was part of it. That is true in other communities. It becomes a key factor in other communities. But the perception is that you can pop out of Kansas City like that, and it's not that bad a drive compared to Metro. If you live in the south side of Chicago and have to drive up to O'Hare to fly out, you spend 2 hours on the road.
And Kansas City Airport is an easy one to get in, park, and get yes, to your airline and out of there very quickly.
Well, but they're going to try to screw that up.
Well, that's what I'm
They are, saying. And it's just amazing because it's one of the most passenger-friendly
Absolutely.
Airports in the country. Let's go to our emails. One from Myron. Wanted to remind everybody that there is a mini tea party event tonight at the Kansan Bar and Grill, and I think that's at 8th and Kansas, roughly. So, folks, if you're part of that group, that's going to be happening this evening. And Kevin did respond. He said, how about you guys spending a little time on the Eric Rucker, Phil Klein hearings? In my opinion, the only reason this is still going on is to make sure nobody ever has the nerve to take on the abortion industry again. In fact, an email earlier from Frank asked the same question. So let's talk about the Rucker Klein hearings. I know Jim Ogle, that was the lead story on WIBW TV 13 last night. You had film footage of Eric coming out of his hearing. You want to start?
Well, I'm speaking personally, not professionally here. I hate these witch hunts that go backwards and try to figure out what someone did on what day when I don't think that they fundamentally exceeded what they do. The voters spoke by saying that they did not want Phil Klein to continue as Attorney General. I think that let's move on. I think going back and trying to document what each individual person did and did wrong is an unproductive use of money. And I am concerned that it is just a witch hunt.
John Arnold.
Money and time. Well, one of the things that I'm working on, Jim, is another little blog entry about, probably it's going to be called We Did Nothing Wrong, and going through all of the different people lately that have used that argument. Well, we were legal. We complied with the law. We did nothing wrong. And whether I'm talking about Speaker O'Neill or Blank Fine of Goldman Sachs or Rucker, who says it was a technical thing in terms of ethics. It's not whether you comply with the law, folks. It's whether you're smart enough to know that doesn't look right. And you're playing with loopholes, and we don't like that, frankly. I don't like
but
it.
John, I'm not sure, and Eric Rucker, you know.
Well, his attorney said it was just a technical lapse or something like that, you know, a minor.
Yeah, the Supreme
thing.
Court dropped, you know, 19 of the 20 charges
sure.
or something like
sure.
that against Eric, and Eric admittedly is a very, very close personal friend.
I know.
And the abortion issue is not a biggie with me. I don't spend a lot of time on it on the air one way or the other. But the point being, I agree with Jim Ogle and so many comments on CJ Online, this does appear to be a witch hunt. Phil Klein will never return to Kansas. You know, he's
right.
happy teaching law in Virginia. Eric Rucker's retired. Why are we doing this? Why are we wasting time and money on this witch hunt? And I think it is.
It's got to be
pro-abortion versus anti-abortion. Supposedly, Chief Justice Breyer is the most militant member of our Supreme Court. Could be behind this. I don't know. But the Supreme Court was after Phil Klein, out to nail Klein and Rucker. It's become a witch hunt over the abortion issue, in my opinion. Eric Rucker, the reason that they had a hearing yesterday, mm-hmm. his attorney settled 90% of the cases. And Eric said, I'm not going to roll over on the remaining 10%. I am not guilty of anything, period. And I believe Eric. You know,
hope that's so.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing, I give the Obama administration a lot of credit in a there were a lot of people who were his supporters who wanted policy to be to go after various officials in the Bush administration about the days immediately after 9/11, you know, the moral incomprehensiveness of doing waterboarding and all that sort of thing. And I give the president all the credit in the world that he refused to conduct a backward-looking witch hunt.
Yeah.
I've already expressed my praise for Gerald Ford. He took one of the greatest political hits of all time by giving Richard Nixon a pardon and getting that off the page. Or there would have been a witch hunt. And
yep.
he paid a price for that in making certain that he would not be reelected, though he got darn close despite it.
He needed another year of people to forget what he had done, or people to forgive what he had done, or to put in perspective what he had
exactly.
done. And he didn't have that. He only had a year and a half.
And Gerald Ford was a gifted politician who knew the price that would be paid from a political standpoint, but felt that as president, he had to do it and put it behind him. And a lot of people still think it was a complete sellout in order for him to become president. You know, he will always face that among people who were alive at the time, who believe that to be true, though there is no evidence of it whatsoever in any way, no. shape, or form that has come out. I mean, after all, we now know who Deep Throat was. Mm-hmm. And still, there's no indication. He sacrificed himself for political good. And I just think that these reverse-looking witch hunts, I do not agree with Phil Klein on almost anything. But he was duly electing in pursuit of policy within the bounds I thought was appropriate for him to pursue, and then the voters told them what they thought of it.
Yep.
We're done. In yep. American political life, we move on.
Yep. Yep. Good point.
Yep. Jim Ogle, I think you knew. Nailed it. Okay, my story of the week. Well, our legislature, my disappointment, our legislators, but we're going to cover that at length Monday on the show, folks. But a story that surfaced, and I know this is going to bring Jim Ogle out of his chair. I think all three of us in this room agree we want to see Topeka progress. We want to see Topeka grow.
Sure.
How do we do that? We don't spend money irresponsibly. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we had minor league ball return to Topeka.
Yes.
And they had two games. The first game, I think they drew 1,400 at our new $10 million Little League complex out at Lake Shawnee. The next afternoon, they drew 200 people. As a result of a crowd of 200 people the following afternoon to watch minor league baseball exhibition game, the Kansas City T-Bones, now we've got this group of leaders in this community that are pushing for a minor league baseball park. You know, if times were good, if the economy was good, maybe minor league baseball would work in Topeka. I don't know. Don't have an opinion on whether it would work or whether it wouldn't. But a crowd of 200 people attending a minor league baseball game would lend me to say maybe we need to give this a lot of thought. But where we need to really focus and give this issue a whole lot of thought is the $15, $20 million that we're going to have to spend building a minor league baseball park. Is now the time. Is now the time to be even remotely considering minor league ball coming to Topeka if, in fact, the taxpayers have to pick up the tab to build a $10, $15, $20 million stadium.
And, well, my understanding is the taxpayers are going to pay for road improvements and of wherever it is, access kind of stuff, you know, the kind of infrastructure if there isn't the proper sewer lines there. But beyond that, that part of this whole development's all private based.
Now they may stadium as well.
Stadium as well. Because the people who are going to run the stadium are going to control how it's used. And the city gets no, well, we don't like having that kind of group in there and rent it out. Well, if your city doesn't own it, the city doesn't get to say who comes in.
There you go.
So I like the deal. They've got a development firm whose business is developing these ballparks, who see Topeka as one of the largest untapped markets in the country for that. And I would remind you, Jim, they put out the notice on Thursday they were going to play that evening game.
Mm-hmm.
And there was even a threat of weather that sure. night, and we drew
1,400.
Mm-hmm. The game in the the game you're making fun of in the after it was in yes. the afternoon during business hours with very little warning. It wasn't like the Royals schedule coming out. How many people the Royals how many adults did the Royals draw yesterday? If you take out all the school kids who came to their 1:10 start yesterday, it was probably about 3,000
yeah.
adults. So I think that offering that as an alternative here, what has been shown across the country is that minor league parks have been very effective economic stimulus and development projects because they make money from all the things they do around it and the services they provide.
Hey, Jim Ogle, if you're right, you know, if this is the private sector spending private money to build a ballpark, come one, come
but,
all.
But understand.
We're in complete agreement.
But understand the point. Just like we do in business parks and all that, the thing we fund is if you're going to take and develop a four-block area and you're putting a ballpark and all this other stuff in as a development project, we're going to upgrade the sewers into there.
Yeah.
We may have to change the access to the roads and the streets and everything like that. Okay, then that is public money that will end up being spent on it. And I think that that's a... I would tell you, if Hills wants to double the size of their corporate staff and do a development in which they do a thing, I think the city should support Hills on that.
And they would. Yeah, and, you know, that's a common thing. Private sector wants to build some facility, pulls people in, city provides the infrastructure.
And now the important thing, though, Jim...
I'm sorry?
But, pull your mic in just a little.
But, Jim, the important thing about this is that this, unlike some of the other people who have been in here, this company has a track record of building and operating these places in other communities and has been very successful. So that's a real feather in their cap. This isn't an individual owner who showed up and say, I'll buy a team for here if you build me a stadium.
Not a bar owner out of Pennsylvania coming in this time.
Exactly.
Which we had a few years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, we did. Okay. All right, yeah, if it's private money, you know, if they have deep enough pockets to build this stadium, I hope the city will stay out of their way when they come in, because obviously if they're the professionals...
Quite frankly, that's the bigger problem. The bigger problem is that we have a desire to not pay for something, but try to nickel and dime and torture them to death in the process. We do not move quickly enough when people come in. City folks for a while there nearly scuttled the Home Depot expansion because, well, it'll take us 90 days to review those plans.
You're kidding.
Kind of stuff. And fortunately, leadership at a higher level, the departmental level said, no, you'll get them done by next week kind of thing. And that allowed to move, you know, we're one of the few communities in the country that added private sector jobs during this recession. That's a real feather in our cap. It's one of the reasons why Kiplinger comes out in an issue next month picking us as one of the 10 best places to live in the country, is that we're actually developing, because part of what we've got in our hip pocket is that from that half-cent sales tax is we've got money to come to the table at and say, you're interested in doing here, we can do the following things. We can help you with the land acquisition and all that. Now, if city government could just finish the review of plans and everything in a more expedited fashion, we'd be hitting even more home runs, I think.
That's a good point. In 1983 or something like that, in Fort Collins, we were one of five cities in the country to win the award from HUD of doing the most to reduce the cost of housing. And how we did that was expediting the review process, because time is money. If you're a developer, you're building things, you want to see things go. Once a big company decides that they want to come into a community, they want everything greased after that. And we spent a whole lot of time with people and the staff saying, you see somebody walk in the door and you've never seen them before, make it quick, folks. Make it that you will help you make do whatever you want to get done. Because these developers, big company guys, send in their guys ahead of time saying, let's look them over. Let's see what kind of hoops they're going to want to put us through.
Exactly.
And if you can demonstrate to them that you're going to work on their side to help make things happen, you're going to be on the top list, the top 10 list for wherever they go.
I think it's very important that we live the philosophy that Go Topeka and the Chamber puts on buttons that says we can do that.
You bet.
We need to be about solving problems rather than putting roadblocks in front of people. And unless that company's coming in and wanting to sacrifice firstborn children or trap people in fire traps, but that's not the issues here.
No. We had a deal. I was dealing with Anheuser-Busch in Colorado, and they were going to build a $400 million facility and employ 400 employees. Well, they built a $600 million facility, employed 700 at this point. And the big, lots of things happened over 18 months of negotiations. We were trying to make things work for them, trying to make it happen, being just as good as we could be as customer service. This is a guy coming in, going to be a big customer for us, big deal. And we finally got to the point that they said, okay, let's talk about review of plans. And we, after some internal negotiation, said, we'll let you review your own plans. You sign off that you're building it to code. We'll clarify it and sign it in affidavit. You got it. You do it. You do your own inspection. They said, you do that? We said, yeah. You're going to build a brewery. You're going to be the only people in it. It's really a sophisticated refrigerator and cook stove, all in one building, and you're going to do it, Nobody else is going to be in there, not the public running through there. There's not going to be anybody living in there. You're going to do it. It's your thing. And they were just dumbfounded that we would do that. It made a heck of a difference. And it was a great model. Fact is, I tried to do it here in Topeka with, oh, something, and boy, the inspectors and everybody just came out of the woodwork. See, we can't do that. We got to sit there. We got to spend our time looking at these things. Same
well,
with California's very
good. You have to, you know, if there's no longer a reason for them to have that many there, it's amazing how they have to have the justification of their jobs. And you, and that
some of that's true. Some of that's true. When there's a downturn, the inspectors don't have as much to do. Yeah. And plan reviewers, yeah. Some of that's true. Anyway.
All right. It sounds good. I think we're all on board then.
Have you
got
been
to the peak of minor league baseball?
Have you been out to the Lake Shawnee fields?
Yes,
they're,
I have.
The bigger ones are not for little league baseball.
They're not.
Well, of course, we have the Golden Giants, and I understand that.
Yeah, and
$9 million. The point.
$9 million, and they're booked every weekend with tournaments and games right now. We could double the size of that complex and still make money off it, and it brings tax dollars in here because of the out-of-town people coming in here and spending to participate in those tournaments.
And Jim, I'd have to say the figures to, as far as your statement that we're paying for it. You know, I understand, you know, these fields are being used. They're being utilized by the public. It's a beautiful facility, folks. This $9 million that we spent out at Lake Shawnee, as far as beauty, no doubt about it. They've done a nice job in that respect, but it's $9 million. We are not going to get $9 million of benefits.
So what if if I can show you we're going to get those $9 million of benefits, what will you offer me, Jim?
He'll buy you a ticket to the game.
I already have tickets to the Golden Giants. I already have tickets. I can take you to a game.
See, Jim, the other thing is that even those these minor leagues, we have the T-Bones and the Oklahoma City, what were they called? Fog or
gosh, it's not actually Oklahoma City. It's Grand Prairie.
Oh, that's right,
Grand Prairie. Like I forgot the actual ownership group is from Grand, operate Grand Prairie.
But the thing is, if we had our own local team here, you know how we support sports teams around here, and baseball is the off season for basketball and football, and I think people would just jump all over it, you know. A year ago, I went down to Kansas City with a couple of friends to the Negro Baseball Museum in Kansas City. Magnificent vision. Just tremendous. Had no idea we had such history with the Negro Leagues.
Man,
going back,
that facility is in trouble, by the way.
I'm funding it. Yeah. It is, and people need to go because it's something. And the history just is amazing. And I sat there right after that. I watched the Little League playoffs, national playoffs, I guess, or maybe the world.
ESPN and ABC,
yeah,
that they carry, yeah.
And the two teams, one seems like was from Taiwan and one was from California, I think, that were in the finals. And I don't think there were two black kids in the whole double field. He said, what happened? How come these kids are not playing baseball anymore? And apparently it's a big deal in the major leagues. Also has been raised the question. We don't have as many Negroes in the league. Okay, fine. Maybe we ought to bring back the Negro Baseball Leagues, you know, because those people, I mean, they had fun, and that's like the minor league. It was a fun place to go. You had a good time. It wasn't expensive. Oh. It didn't cost you $20 for a hot dog and a beer.
John Arnold, we go to two or three T-Bones games a year. It's a wonderful facility.
Okay.
It's
good.
A lot of fun.
Good.
And between innings, the T-Bones, it's an entertaining
They entertain.
Experience.
They do things.
However, you can't get cheap hot dogs and beer at the T-Bones.
Hmm? You can't? Yeah.
No. They understand how creating an environment in which makes you feel good means you'll be more loose about buying concessions and the like. I mean, the sodas are at the $5 and the hot dogs are $4.50 and all that sort of thing. And they are extremely successful.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter that they have a poor team or they won the league championship as they did a couple of years ago. People come out there and they have a good time at
it's
the game.
It's a good
It's
atmosphere.
A family experience.
It's entertainment.
It's an entertainment. You're right. And Topeka, you know, for years, the perception of this town is that it hasn't been a good sports town. I could not disagree more. You know, going back to when we had professional basketball in the CBA League, the first year We held the season attendance record. We held the single game attendance record when we had the Topeka Sizzlers. When the Scarecrows came here with hockey, professional hockey.
Yes, yeah.
I think we were the number two league in the number two team in the league in terms of attendance until the owner completely screwed the thing up. You're going to take a look at the Kansas Coyotes. 8 years, they still are maintaining a fan base of 1,500 to watch minor league football, indoor football.
The junior hockey with the Roadrunners finished second in the league in attendance.
Second in attendance.
And we'll host the national tournament here next year at the Kansas Expo Center.
Yeah, this is a good sports town. But, you know, again, getting back to this minor league stadium, I'm always looking for ways not to cut corners, but to hold the line on expenses. You know, what a tremendous coup it would be if we could get this group out of Grand Prairie together with somebody at Washburn and taking a look at what's a pretty decent Division II baseball field and just working in concert with Washburn University, making this a first-class Division II baseball field. And at the same time, let's incorporate minor league baseball into it. Win-win for everybody. We save money. We help Washburn University, one of the cornerstones, one of the true jewels in the crown of Topeka. You know, everybody wins. But
certainly.
Jim Ogle, always appreciate you coming in, my friend.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right.
Always good to spend
Friday
with
you. Good to see you in 3 weeks. What's coming up on WIBW? Anything coming up this weekend of note that out of the ordinary?
Nothing purely commercial that I want to throw to you. I would tell you that before the weather starts to get bad, I would urge you, if you've not been down to the farmer's market in the judicial parking lot, you're missing a treat. It is every Saturday, it's like attending the fair. Attending the fair, like when I was a kid attending the fair. Great providers of produce. They're selling plants. They're selling handmade items. I love Our Lady of Guadalupe, the folks selling the breakfast burritos.
Oh, yeah.
I always use that as my justification to get a couple of those. The farmer's market's a real gem of this community, and I would urge you to go down and enjoy it.
Great. Thanks for everything.
Yes.
I used to go all the time, but I haven't been
in
a while.
Don't forget your fan mail that I delivered to you. And John Arnold, blog's coming up next week?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I put one up there today called The Perfect Game, talking about, since we're talking about baseball, about the no-hitter. You know, the Athletics pitcher, Bauman, I think it was, pitched a no-hitter last week.
On Mother's Day.
First time in, I think, 19. There have been 19 no-hitters, and so it's pretty rare. So I had to reminisce about my no-hitter.
But one of the remarkable things about...
I didn't pitch.
...about technology is that, and we were talking about... We began by talking about wasting Facebook, right?
Yeah.
Someone sends me a note. I'm driving, I look, and it pops up on the screen, and it says, oh, my God, the A's pitcher has a perfect game, and he's going into the ninth. I spin the dial, my XM radio in my car, to the Oakland A's call of that final inning. And as I'm driving home on the turnpike in the middle of Kansas, I get to hear the final three outs pitched and how it plays out. What is a historic occasion. There are only nine... Your chances of being killed by a terrorist are greater than being at a perfect game in the major leagues.
Yep. Or seeing our legislators spend money responsibly. Okay, Dave Jackson on deck. Stay tuned, folks.
See you, Jim.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience the local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Go. Topeka Collegiate, Topeka's only independent school, treats every child as gifted. Each student is encouraged to excel in a caring, small class learning environment guided by humanitarian principles. At Topeka Collegiate, children fall in love with learning. Enrollment is limited. Call 228-0490 or visit our website at topekacollegiate.org. Topeka Collegiate School, educating children for life.
Excuse me, why are you saving those old eyeglasses?
You know the ones, stuck away in the desk drawer, haven't been worn in years. Yeah, those. You should donate them to your local Lions Club. Lions Clubs have been collecting used eyeglasses for years. They'll take your old eyeglasses and recycle them for someone in need of proper eyewear. Call your local Lions Club for information on where you can donate your old eyeglasses. Lions Clubs International. We serve.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org. It's the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back. Dave Jackson, we missed you last week.
We did?
We did.
I was gone?
Yes.
Where?
I don't know.
Where was last week? Oh, my God, that's right.
Where were you last week?
Oh, Mother's Day. Where was I last week?
I don't know.
Delivering. Delivering flowers, Mother's Day. Yes,
oh, okay.
I was in Maple Hill.
Okay.
Maple Hill.
I know. We just wanted a half hour longer with our show.
Yeah.
And we had John Arnold, and last week was TV 49, Denise X. So
mm-hmm. Well, that was nice.
Yeah, that worked out.
But, yeah, we have all these fundraisers that we deliver. We sell 12-inch geranium hanging baskets and 12-inch pots, 10-inch pots, and then geraniums, whatever a community might want, and they're all focused on getting that product at Mother's Day. And we were, there's been a couple other nurseries go out of business local, and others out of town have raised their price beyond what the fundraisers can actually make a really good profit on. So we wound up having to deliver in 12-inch pots and 12-inch hanging baskets, close to 800 or 900 of those things. Those last 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and the days just kind of piled up on us. That was Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Those 3 days together, I logged 48 hours of greenhouse
good
time.
Good night.
16
hours a day. My Lord. I'm going to talk about North Topeka for a few minutes a little later in the show. A lot happening out there.
Oh, it's exciting.
Oh, Dickie's Barbecue, getting ready to open May the 25th. Dave Weinrich's a good friend. So
is he?
To give that
See the bald-headed guy that runs
yep.
it? Okay.
Yep. And that's opening May the 25th. It's going to be their soft opening, of course. Madan Raton, one of my favorite people in the world. The Holiday Inn Express in North Topeka is going to be open probably within the month, and that's going to be the first real quality motel in
right.
North Topeka.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And since the first Holiday Inn opened on that spot.
Yes.
Anyway, I have been meeting with him yesterday and today about getting the landscaping kind of finalized. I don't know
what
whether I'll get
guy.
The bid or not, but because the bid he's got from some other folks is not really all that good.
Well, we stayed at the Sleep Inn in Salina last weekend, which Madan Raton owns, and I think you were involved in...
Right, I did the landscape planning and the basic landscaping that was done there.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it looks any better out there or not, but his big mistake out there was not putting in an irrigation system to keep things watered.
Yeah.
It's still kind of in the middle of nowhere, but Salina's moving that way. He'll be in the middle of it before long.
He sure will be. So it's a great, wonderful place to stay. And then downtown North Topeka, you're heavily involved in Tacoma. This is going to be a major arts district for Topeka. John Arnold and Jim Ogle mentioned that kind of on the way out the door. John's still with us, by the way.
You bet. I think it sounds terrific.
Noto, go to the website, www.notoartsdistrict.com.
N-O-T-O, artsdistrict.com.
John Hunter is just at Washburn has done a fantastic job with also with the help of Anita Wolgast. They kind of head up. That's all part of the Quality of Life Committee with the and as part of, you know, the what's overreaching.
The visioning? Heartland Visioning?
Heartland Visioning. So they're the Quality of Life Subcommittee, and then the subcommittee of that is cultural and arts and that kind of stuff.
A Thing of Beauty in North Topeka.
Will be.
Speaking of a Thing of Beauty.
Yes.
Speaking of a Thing of Beauty. I went to the Jackson's White Barn Greenhouse
Nursery.
Garden Center Nursery.
It's a nursery. We got to call it a nursery for...
Went to the nursery two Saturdays ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever walked into a business, John Arnold, where I have just absolutely been blown away by the sheer beauty of a business.
Is this the new one of
Fairlawn?
61st and Fairlawn, huh?
Okay.
It is, I'm telling you, the whole setting out there. You know, the Hulquist where they live, and then right to the west of them is this White Barn.
Big old dairy barn.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, just the sheer beauty of this place will blow you away.
Really?
It is one of the most attractive businesses I've ever been in my life anywhere. I mean, they have done it right. You have done it right. Dave Jackson, the Hulquist have done it right. I'm telling you, folks, whether you need garden supplies or not, take a drive out to 61st and Fairlawn just to view this. View this place.
Lynn has done a nice job.
Oh, incredible. I mean, it's incredible. It's the only way I can think of to describe it would be incredible.
Well, thank you.
It's that good.
He wanted to set up the nursery beds to resemble plantings and all of that kind of stuff, and took his time in putting the material out there, and it's pretty. It's pretty. I just hope people realize they can take those plants home with them.
Once
they pass by the cash register.
Mm-hmm. Once they pass, yeah. That's key. Certainly key. But anyway, well, thank you.
Yeah, because it doesn't lend itself looking like a traditional retail environment by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
You get a point. I'm sure you said that somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, some of these plantings, the way that they're situated out there, I mean, it's
berms
landscaping perfection.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm sure people are going to walk in there and say, we can't buy these.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a price tag on every one. So.
But it's just absolutely beautiful. And, again, 61st and Fairlawn, there is a sign. If you look over, if you're driving down 61st Street, there is a sign on the barn.
There's a sign on the barn.
You need signage out on that street, though.
Well, we have some portable, two portable signs out on the street as well. Or they're supposed to be. I bought them. So I hope they go ahead and put them up every day, but they're supposed to be out there. We don't have money for any kind of a, what do you call those, signs, a big permanent marker.
Oh. Yeah.
And until we really get the zoning issues settled with the county, Barry Beagle and those folks, we have to go tread lightly in terms of the...
Are you not properly zoned
well,
for a nursery?
Rural residential housing is properly zoned for a nursery,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
However, they can take a strict interpretation, and there's certain things that you can and cannot do under that zoning. And the alternative, of course, is to section that piece of ground off and make it a planned unit development to the tune of about $15,000 for zoning and legal work.
Really?
Which we're trying to avoid at this point, because neither Lynn or I are particularly long in dollars. And so if we can do it properly under that zoning, that's the way we'll go. If, in fact, then that we get so large that we have to go the other direction and we have $15,000, then we'll go with the commercial.
Kind of like what we were talking about with Jim Ogle, about trying to make things work easily without governmental interference to let people do what they need to do,
right,
and expand businesses, and that's what you're trying to do.
What? Yeah.
And you're having to go through the county hoops.
All right. So far, it's not been really terrible bad. Lynn has been up to see Barry, and they haven't shut us down yet. And I've been in to visit the county counselor. He's an old softball playing buddy of mine. So.
Rich Eckert?
Yeah.
Sharp guy.
Signing is an issue, though. Mm-hmm. It's part of that whole thing, and you have to keep calling it a nursery. You can't call it a
greenhouse
or a commercial.
Lynn had his landscaping sign out there all the years, the two or three years that he's been out there. It said Hulquist Landscaping. But the minute we opened for retail there, he had to take down the landscaping sign.
Really?
Because... because you can't do landscaping from that location. So that's what we're facing, kind of, is a...
Huh, okay.
It's a...
Now, folks, that's... They're open, Jackson's Greenhouse, the White Barn. Jackson's Greenhouse is open 3 days a week, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, if you have a chance this weekend, today, tomorrow, or Sunday, I know it's going to be raining tomorrow, but take a drive out there. I mean, the sheer beauty of this place, it's just, it'll blow you away.
What's the easiest way to get there, since Fairlawn stops at 37th, whatever it is?
The way we went, you know, if you're coming from the southwest, if you're coming out of the Sherwood area or the area you live, you live right off of Wanamaker.
Okay.
Go down Wanamaker to 53rd, go east on 53rd Street to Fairlawn,
okay.
And south on Fairlawn, it'll take you to the front door
there
of Jackson's nursery.
From here, of course, you go up Topeka Boulevard to 57th, turn right to 57th, you tee at Burlingame Road. You could go south on Burlingame, and that Burlingame turns into 61st Street.
Okay.
And then Burlingame heads south, but you just stay on 61st Street till you get to almost to Fairlawn Road and turn in the driveway there. It's pretty.
Yeah.
That's the route I'm taking when we leave here. I've got a truckload of
Yeah,
of
just
plants.
Go south on Burlingame. It'll get you there.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you stay on Burlingame, you'll end up at the front door of Jackson's nursery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what a facility.
I'm going to go out and take a look, because it's just amazing to me that the county won't let you, Dave, expand your business all that clearly, but they keep the city from annexing Lake Sherwood, too.
On that, we're going to cut John's mic off. Stay tuned, Dave. Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. A lot to talk about today. We've got, there's a lot to talk about.
We'll
obviously come back and take it where you want it to go.
All right.
Okay, stay tuned, folks. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers topical line designer frames with names like Acnea, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Frost line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates.com. at cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back with Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, and John Arnold staying with us. In fact, John.
Is John supposed to be learning how to run that board?
Well,
like
he
so
is.
Technically adjusting it. Pretty impressive.
I'm telling you. On to this. Now, John might fill in for me someday.
I know nothing.
Upstairs. Well, but John, if I can do it, believe you me.
That's just what I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very foibled when it comes to anything that deals with technology, to say the least.
Me you too.
Yes.
Me too.
Dave, a lot to talk about. We missed you last Friday, so we've got some catching up to do. Looking at your ad that was in Wednesday's paper, it says, with all the extra rains we've had, it may be necessary to plant your tomatoes and peppers by digging the hole and planting them with a quality potting soil. Why do you need potting soil if we've had a lot of rain? I thought potting soil just added nutrients to the soil and was kind of a replacement for rain in some respects. Not so, huh?
Potting soil is a maintain its ability to have oxygen. When you put that waterlogged soil back in the hole, your plant's going to become oxygen-starved, the root system. You have to have oxygen as part of osmosis. Roots can't take up water if water has displaced all of the oxygen in the soil. It's all part of the formula that we learned when we were in, eighth or ninth grade science, osmosis and all that kind of stuff, and we transmitted water through a membrane as part of one of our little science experiments and that kind of stuff. So the potting soil brings the oxygen back down to the root.
It's a looser soil.
It's a looser. It's more friable, and the water has a little more difficulty displacing the oxygen in the soil.
Okay. You know, if we have heavy rains, would going out to your tomatoes or, I guess, anything you've got planted in the garden, spreading a little sand in with the soil?
That doesn't help at all.
That doesn't do anything?
Mm-mm. No. Because sand doesn't displace anything exactly. Most of the soils around here are clay, what you wind up doing is having the clay bond to the sand and you've made cement.
Very close, yeah. But peat moss,
peat moss, any compost, yeah. You're big on the peat moss. I think I might have forgot to bring you your bag of peat moss. And,
I haven't gotten around to planting. The weather hadn't been right.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
But anyway, peat moss is that's what good quality potting soil is Canadian sphagnum peat moss. That's the highest, together with vermiculite, perlite, and some things for the soil.
Now again, what is peat moss in layman's terms? What is peat moss?
Well, peat moss is a natural byproduct of the north, I mean the tundra, and it's the breakdown of compost pile
in the northern tundra then.
Yeah, basically it's the forerunner of coal then. As layers are added, then peat moss becomes coal.
In terms that Jim would better understand, if you go to Scotland, you can get the peat moss. That's where they make the scotch.
Mm-hmm.
And the peat moss is very important to the scotch, Jim. So
got it.
There you.
It flavors the. Yeah, they fill
the scotch. Yeah,
got it.
You have peaty scotch. You know, more peat moss in the. I don't know. Drainage or whatever they do.
Right.
Makes it more peaty. Single malted scotches are more peaty.
See there.
Peat moss.
All right.
Now you can relate.
Now I can relate.
But you know that's what they used to heat their houses with too. Scotland, they didn't have coal, but they used these bricks of peat moss that were near coal.
But as you say, it's just not old enough to be coal, but it's close to. The carbon content, I suppose, is real close.
Exactly. So that's what it is, what it does. They there's more peat moss being produced by natural causes than the companies removing those the peat from the bogs in the fields up there in Canada. It's a completely renewable source of
this isn't a domestic product. If we're buying peat moss, we're buying a Canadian.
Well, no, there are peat bogs in Michigan and Minnesota as well along the northern border. The quality just isn't quite the same. It tends to be a little bit blacker, tends to be a little heavier, soggier stuff. The peat in Canada just for growing purposes, at least in my 40 years of experience, is better peat. I've tried the other. I've done it. I've learned everything the hard way. And you save a couple bucks on Michigan peat, but it's it creates a few more problems. It's more acidic. You have to amend your soil with a little more lime and those kinds of things. Then Canadian peat's just pretty much natural stuff.
Well, it's like saving a few bucks, you know, on grass seed. Mm-hmm. You can buy a big box store grass seeds. You're going to end up with weeds, 5% weeds.
Right.
To our TriPower, which I've used last year. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it looks great.
Still does.
Absolutely does.
Hadn't killed your lawn in a whole year.
You have sold me on TriPower. Really. Okay.
We're getting towards the end of the time that we're going to be able to plant that. I did bring in a new pallet, and it's still $59.99. Which is $30 less than it was a year ago per bag. So there's time to do it, especially with this cool weather and moist conditions. If you're going to do some planting, do it in the next week or two.
Okay, sounds good.
Covered one of our items in the ad. Very good.
Dave, does the peat moss coming out of Canada, is that up from the area, I think it's in Alberta, where they have the oil sands? Is that near?
Actually, ours comes from near Toronto.
Oh, north really? And the east, other side.
North west of Toronto.
Okay, all right.
And most of those peat bogs are up that direction rather than out west.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting.
There may be some over there, but at least for our part of the country, it comes from. We've got these French guys that call up and say, I can't do a French accent, but you can barely understand them. They tell us our truck's coming.
Folks, by the way, if you have a question, jim.cates@cjonline.com, and I've got one pertaining to my yard. We've talked about this somewhat. I've got Bermuda in about a third of my front yard. Want to get rid of it. I don't like Bermuda grass. Want to replace it with fescue. Bermuda is very difficult to kill.
It is.
And you've talked about gassing Bermuda. 87 octane, 89 octane. When you say gassing Bermuda, what do you mean by gassing Bermuda?
Well,
how do I get rid of it? Because I'd like to replace it, and I've got a week and a half to do it, you say. Maybe 2 weeks.
Well,
so I can come in with TriPower fescue.
That's not going to happen.
Okay.
Your TriPower fescue is going to have to be done in the fall because your entire summer, beginning late June, 1st of July, then is going to be spent with your kills all over the fescue with your spreader sticker. You're going to have to do that 3 times, 2 weeks apart, to make sure it is totally dead. You want to make sure you're doing that when it's warm and the Bermuda is really growing. In other words, after a rain and it's warm, that's when it'll absorb the most of the kills all, which is just simply a Kilzol is a super concentrated form of glyphosate, which is Roundup. Uh-huh. We sell the 41%, which is roughly twice the concentration that you'll buy at Home Depot. So that's what you do. It takes 3 separate sprayings to make sure that you've killed that Bermuda all the way down into those rhizomes, which can on Bermuda grass can extend easily 3 feet under the ground. And so that's what you're going to. That's going to be your project. And then whether or not you decide to plug your zoysia in front or you're going to have your fescue, I guess, is going to be up to you. But the earlier you start on the Bermuda, then the more likely you'd move to your zoysia. But you can wait till the middle of July to kill Bermuda and still get your seeding done by the 1st of September.
Okay. Now, I understand the fescue will not spread.
Right.
But zoysia does. Mm-hmm. So could you plug zoysia in without killing the Bermuda first? Will it spread and kill it out, knock it out?
Well, zoysia will not take Bermuda.
It won't?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Bermuda is more aggressive, as Jim's found out, than his zoysia is.
Yeah.
The zoysia Jim inherited, I guess, from your neighbor, something he's thrown over from the neighbor, and he's going to take that down and plant that along the lake. His plugging should get underway here before long.
I started plugging last week. I haven't been down to take a look at the plugs to see how they're doing. When should I start seeing some results?
Well, they're not. It's been too cool for any tendrils to take off. I presume your zoysia was green then when you plugged it last week.
Half green, half,
Okay,
green.
Well, you won't be another month before you see much going on.
Okay.
Before it really takes off.
So if it really hasn't turned green, the plugs really haven't turned green yet, don't need to worry.
Don't need to worry.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Now, on Bermuda, if in fact, you know, we gas it, and again, we're talking about kills all.
Right.
When we
the EPA gas, wouldn't. You could gas it. I mean, that would kill it, but
No, I'm talking about gasoline.
Gasoline, diesel, whatever. Oh, that'll kill it as well. But that's there is a federal prohibition against that.
I was going to say.
Yeah. But it would be effective. But
right.
Use diesel. Okay, let's say I get 90% of it. Mm-hmm. Now I've planted fescue.
Mm-hmm.
Next summer, you know, I've got this fescue coming up with mm-hmm. this little sprigs of Bermuda. What do you do then?
You have two choices.
When you're trying to kill just the Bermuda that's coming up
in spots.
And spots in your fescue lawn. How do you get rid of the Bermuda then?
Well, Fertilome, through its high yield line, does also have a product that you can overspray that takes Bermuda out of fescue. Fairly expensive. They say it controls. They don't go to the full Mate and say that it's a full killer, but it contains or controls Bermuda, and that of course is the what the heck's the name of that product? Well, anyway.
But there is a product out there.
There is a product out there that I'd still recommend. If you've got little patches of fescue, just go out there and hit those with
kills all.
Well, the kills all on a sponge, a kitchen sponge mop, for example. Just go around and with the with a wet sponge that's got Kilzol in the sponge instead of water. So you
Okay. So the Kilzol would still work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If you'd spot treat.
Now,
or we even have this little roller ball. Looks like a
All right, now that I've killed this Bermuda or it's turned brown.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think it's dead.
Mm-hmm.
How soon can I come in? Because now there's Kilzol, obviously, in the soil.
No, Kilzol is absolutely neutral when it hits the soil.
Right.
There has no soil activity whatsoever.
So you can go in immediately for all intents and purposes. And
the label tells you to wait a week or 10 days. In point of fact, I've put Kilzol down in a bed and then in the morning and then planted the shrubs and trees in that same bed in the afternoon.
Really?
No impact.
We need to take a break. Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road. Been there for, forever. 232-3416 if you have questions, 7 days a week. Gardening questions, yep, they can answer them. Or the new location in southwest Topeka, 61st and Fairlawn. Folks, I'm telling you, there is not a prettier business than Jackson's Nursery. At 61st and Pearl. Just absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. No other way to describe it. Okay, stay tuned. Jim.Cates at cjonline.com. When we come back, Terrence has emailed us, and we'll go to Terrence's question. On the flip side of the break, stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Foss line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back at Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, and we have John Arnold that has joined us today as well. Jim.cates@cjonline.com if you've got a gardening question. And we've got one from Terrence, and it says, Dave, I bought 4 bags of compost and 3 bags of peat moss to put in my soil, which is very heavy, and I'm planting several hostas. Will this help my soil conditions? I have never been able to get anything to grow in that area except weeds, so I thought I would see if this would help the soil. And Terrence is one of our Manhattan listeners.
Actually, 30 miles north up there, but we just meet in Manhattan when football games.
30 miles north.
Yeah, right.
What town are
25 or 30 miles. He's up at, there's a, years ago, 25, 30 years ago, K-State Foundation was going to make a big profit on a housing development on the north end of Lake Tuttle.
Okay.
So it's 25 or 30 miles out there at the end of Lake Tuttle, and they subdivided a pasture out there, and that's where Terrence lives.
Okay.
There's probably, I don't know how many houses out there now, maybe 25 or 30.
Uh-huh.
Out of a potential, what did he tell me, 200 or 300? So anyway, Terrence,
that area would still take off. You know, it's a beautiful setting.
Mm-hmm. Provided, Terrence, that the hostas are planted in the shade, they'll love what you just did for the soil, and it's really, really hard to kill a hosta. So they ought to do just fine, hopefully. That's what hostas love. It's just exactly what you added to the soil. So anyway, good luck. Let me know in the fall how that comes out.
Okay. Gardening, John, vegetable gardener. Do you grow vegetables?
I tried a garden a couple, 3 years ago, and I grew corn and cantaloupes and carrots and potatoes, and the cantaloupes were great. I got about a peck of potatoes and maybe 3 years of corn.
Your corn probably needed more nitrogen out where you live.
And it probably needed more water. I had to leave during August for a couple of weeks, and it was really hot, and so it didn't get done.
Hmm. Your corn should have been... Well, you got a late start on your corn then as well, then, because corn ought to be planted no later than the end of this month.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because once you get into the hot weather, you have a little bit of difficulty with pollen germination or pollen,
sure.
Pollination of your ears.
I remember as a kid detasseling corn for up in Atchison.
Oh yeah, up that way. I was going to say.
But in August, the corn was 12 feet tall or mm-hmm. something like that. Yeah, not mine.
Right? No, not yours.
I started a little late, but so now I'm trying to do flowers and landscaping stuff. And
yep.
I'm wrestling with whether or not to invest in a sprinkler system, and I suspect that's what I really need to do.
Well,
but I don't know.
I'd save the money, but I'm not in the sprinkler business. So.
There you go. I meet a couple of sprinklers that I drag around. I don't mind doing that. Yeah.
It's good exercise. You need to do that.
Yeah, that's right.
As far as planting vegetables, let's get into vegetable planting first.
Mm-hmm.
Tomatoes, peppers, this is the time. right?
Tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, cucumbers, all of the cucurbits, squash, watermelon, cantaloupe, all of that can be planted now, as well as sweet potatoes. Finally, you're going to be warm enough next week to finally get those in the ground. The one thing that I'd say that still needed to be waited on, if you want pumpkins at Halloween, is wait on pumpkins until the 1st of June or so. Because if you plant them early, they'll finish off, they'll mature early in September mid-September, and your pumpkins might be soft by then or have succumbed to some kind of a disease. So yep. I generally tell people to hold off on that.
Varmints go after pumpkins around here?
Not that much,
okay.
They
pull your mic in just a little.
Okay, better. There we go.
Got it.
So anyway, that's all time to do that. You can use those as you're picking up the vegetable plants. That can be part of our Mixer Match flat sale that just started Wednesday, which is $16.99 for 48 plants. The four packs of tomatoes and peppers and eggplant, all of those can be part of the flat sale, the Mixer Match flat sale, which we do annually. $16.99 is still the price. It's been that for a number of years. And so, of course, it's safe now, 98% safe at least, to plant your annuals, your annual flowers. None of those should be harmed by any of the weather that we're going to have in the foreseeable future, at least.
Because May the 10th was pretty much the date, mm-hmm. as far as traditional planting, worrying mm-hmm. about frost.
Right, exactly.
May the 10th is the frost date.
Frost safe, yeah. April 20th is average, but at that point you're half and half. That's average. So, and besides which, if you plant April the 20th, a lot of the annuals that you plant are going to not appreciate it much, because periwinkle and zinnias, for example, with the cool soils, will just pick up fungus and just die. The root rot gets them because it's cold, and they are susceptible to Pythium root rot. So you don't want to plant those. Now's the time, finally, for the soil to finally be warm enough that you can take them out. We kept all of our zinnias hidden and our periwinkle hidden from the customers until...
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, they would ask for them and say, well, we've got them, but I don't want you to buy them yet. But anyway, so there's all kinds of things you learn through the years the hard way.
Yeah.
The customers... You know, we were pushing periwinkle years ago when we first started. We'd push it in April. Customers would bring them back all yellow and dead.
So you sold me a bad plant.
Right, exactly. And so now we just don't sell them.
Yeah.
What's a periwinkle?
Periwinkle vinca, it's a heat-loving annual. There's a lot of confusion because vinca minor is a hardy ground cover, and people also, because the flower is periwinkle blue, they call it periwinkle as well. But periwinkle, annual periwinkle, is a flower that looks a whole lot like impatiens but loves the blazing heat. You can plant that right along the sidewalk. You can plant it downtown in the medians if they want to. You know, it just loves the heat.
But it's annual.
It's an annual. You have to replant every year.
Yep.
Not like vinca minor, which is a perennial ground cover, but which only blooms in the spring blue. So, anyway, that's what we're talking about. Zinnias, of course, everybody knows what zinnias are, and there's been a lot of breeding in zinnias, so now you have the little short ground cover zinnias, and you've got the big, tall zinnias with the big, ruffly flowers. There's all kinds of zinnias, but none of them prefer the darker weather, dark, cold weather. So, anyway, a lot of fun.
Well, John, what are you going to be planting?
Oh,
I have flowers, meaning...
I bought some ivy from Dave last week, and I'm trying to get some ivy to grow alongside a split rail fence, or grow onto it at some point. And I planted some impatiens and some petunias.
Petunias like the cold.
Do they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So they'll take off, and the impatiens will follow along soon enough.
Yep. And I also planted some sunflowers, some seeds, because I like sunflowers. Planted a bunch of those.
And the big
some,
ones?
Some wild, yeah, the giant. You can mm-hmm. send me some giants.
Thought I did.
And wildflowers, and so who knows? I'll either have a pile of weeds or a really nice yard this year.
Well, it's hard to tell when you're growing wildflower seed what is a weed and what isn't.
That's the hardest thing for me.
It is tough.
What should I pull?
It's tough for everybody.
Yeah.
We need to take a break. Dave, when we come back, if we could, let's take a look at some of the specials.
Yep.
It's going to be at Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center and Jackson's Nursery at 61st and Fairlawn as well. We'll do that when we return. Stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in Mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhouse, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Frost line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
And we're back with Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, and Jackson's Nursery, the new location at 61st and Fairlawn that's open Friday, Saturdays, and Sunday. Folks, if you just tuned in, if you haven't been there, check it out. It is just beautiful, beautiful. Dave, let's talk about some of the specials you've got this weekend.
Well, we extended the hanging basket special from Mother's Day. Not that we didn't sell lots and lots and lots of hanging baskets. We just had to... give people an opportunity to come out and choose some hanging baskets when there's not so many people around. And they're two for $25.99. That's our regular $16.99 a piece hanging basket. So if you buy one for $16.99, you might as well invest $9 and get the second one, because they are, they're great. They're just beautiful. They're planted in a soil that the Fertilome potting soil by Lambert's that we'll grow them the year round. We'll send you home with some Fertilome hanging basket food so that you don't have the salt buildup. So that's the other special that we briefly mentioned, the $16.99 flat mixer match flat special that people always watch for every year. The other thing was that it's getting near the time, the end of the time that you can safely apply, well, not safely, that you can apply and prevent or kill any crabgrass that's come up with the new Fertilome products, Fertilome turf and ornamental, if you wish it without fertilizer, The new Fertilome Weed and Feed has the Dimension in it with fertilizer. So we have those two products that if you've put it off, then it's really time to get after it. We also have one further product, the one I call Fertilome Five-Way, that also has the weed killer in it that would kill John Spurge and his dandelions and his clover. And
what's plus, it called?
Well, I call it Fertilome Five-Way. The name is Fertilome Weed Out plus Lawn Fertilizer and Crabgrass Preventer, but it also kills crabgrass.
Okay.
It kills and prevents crabgrass. That's two things. It kills and prevents weeds, and then it fertilizes your lawn. Now, that's a 10,000-square-foot bag only, and it's $69.99. It's a load, but it does everything. The crabgrass killer, the crabgrass preventer lasts all the way through September. Unlike the Scotts Plus 2 that you see advertised, which is going to give up the ghost in about 6 or 7 weeks from now, you're going to have crabgrass again late summer if you use that product. And so anyway, that's the things that you need to get after right away. We still getting in water plants. We've got a new crop of lilies on the way, water lilies on the way. We've got all kinds of water plants. And slowly we're getting them moved out to the White Barn. I don't know that they're going to be there this weekend, but next weekend we are shooting to have a water gardening display out there. And we, of course, have sod. I don't know if they're going to be able to cut us fresh sod today yet. We're still hoping for that. Otherwise, we'll be short this weekend. If they can't get that cut this afternoon, we'll be out.
Yeah, because there's a 50-50 chance of rain tomorrow.
Is that right?
I believe, yeah.
Well, early in the day or late?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
When's zoysia sod going to be ready?
Probably, I haven't given them a call. I have to go down to way south of Overland Park to pick that up. Typically, the first part of next week, I should be able to pick up a pallet of zoysia. And bring it back, and then we...
Zoysia does well in this climate?
We're transition zone, so in the sun, it can be the dominant grass in your lawn. In the shade, of course, it's not going to do well at all, or even partial shade. So it does well. You can have a beautiful zoysia lawn. The only trouble is it's only green from May through mid-September. And the rest of the time, you're looking at mostly a brown lawn. Now, from time to time, I have some people call up, and I can't acquire green dye. I'm serious.
Yeah.
But there is green dye for zoysia.
I'll be done.
And for people that want a green lawn.
It doesn't damage the lawn, I guess.
Right.
If you're selling it.
It's labeled
no
for
permanent damage.
No.
How long is the dye good for?
Well, it's good supposedly all winter.
Really?
Yeah.
So if you sprayed your zoysia... In October, you're going to have a green yard.
Through the winter.
Through the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Really? What's the downside?
The cost. It's always the cost.
Expensive? Yeah. Is it that expensive?
I think it's last time I bought some for some customers, it was $50 or $55 for enough to do 2,500 square feet.
Okay, so it's fairly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Would it work on fescue as well?
But what's the point?
Well, if you're dying the yard in the winter.
Uh-huh, your fescue doesn't really even start to turn brown until about Christmas.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was green all the way up to Christmas this year, but sure, you could use it. Fescue really didn't start turning brown until we got all that snow. It was kind of still green when I left.
But it is an ugly brown in January, February, and March.
It is. I agree.
It wasn't this year. It was covered up with snow.
Right.
Good point.
Yeah, this year we had nice snow.
It's just the illusion of nice weather to look out your backyard and to see a green backyard in February.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have a very, very marketable product there.
Well, it would be helpful if they could bring the price down a little bit, but it's primarily used in the... high-end resorts and that kind of stuff. And I can get it, but...
I play golf and occasionally play at Lake Shawnee.
Mm-hmm.
And the fairways out there are zoysia, I think.
Mm-hmm.
because they're brown longer. I mean, the rough will be green, but the fairway then will be brown. Probably, I don't know, until about now.
Really?
I'm not sure. I haven't been out there this year.
Uh-oh.
Last year. Yeah, I know. It's been too wet or cold to play golf. Awful. But it really does become a nice grass for a fairway or for a lawn once it gets up and gets green. It's
right.
Very nice.
But anyway, that's something we can do. Yes,
we're
sir.
Just about out of time. We did get another email from Terrence, and he wants to know, would cabbage or lettuce work where I am? I'm planting the hostas or maybe a blueberry bush. Or can you recommend some other edible plants to go there?
Was that sun or shade? I mean, you know, we got a sure cabbage and cauliflower and broccoli and stuff will work out there. It should have been planted about 10 days or 2 weeks ago.
Well, Terrence in his previous email said, I've never been able to get anything to grow in that area except weeds. So I thought I would see if this would help the soil. I would assume
he's
got to be talking about a shady area.
Well, we would hope if he's going to do hostas, but... cabbage and cauliflower, and those will do well in a half day of sun in his area if he gets it planted.
Okay.
Not a problem. The blueberries take more acidic soil than what he's going to be able to do with that. We have to reduce the pH down to 4.8 to 5 to grow blueberries. He could grow them. He has to kind of create his own special acidic bog out there to grow them, but blueberries will survive. They just take a whole different soil environment.
Terrence, we appreciate the email, my friend. You have a good weekend. We are just about out of time. Dave Jackson, real quick, coming up this weekend at Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, some of the big specials.
Flat sale, $16.99, mix or match. The hanging basket special, two for $25.99 for our 10-inch hanging baskets, where we have similar savings on the bigger baskets. In other words, if you get two baskets, you still get the savings as well. So we'll work with you to get you priced. Get you to a price you can love on our baskets, because we have baskets all the way up to $70.
Okay, see you next Friday.
Sounds good.
John, we'll talk to you next Friday too, my friend.
You bet.
Coming up Monday on the show, Tim Richard returns, and he's going to be with us Monday morning at 8 o'clock, coming in at 9. Bob Beatty, one of my favorites, and we're going to be talking about his recent trip to Great Britain to view the Britain election process. We'll be talking about that as well as national politics. And then at 10 o'clock, Peggy Mast coming in, Chris Steiniger. We're going to have a review of the 2010 legislative session. Both of these are good people, folks, but my Lord, this might be the worst legislative session in the history of the state when it comes to responsible government spending. So we're going to be talking about all of that Monday morning. You don't want to miss it. Have a great, great weekend. We'll see you Monday. I'm Jim Gates.